Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
You remember Antoine Rockamora? Half black, half Samoan. Used to call him Tony Rocky Horror.
Yeah, maybe fat, right?
I wouldn't go so far as to call the brother fat. I mean, he got a weight problem. What's the gonna do? He's Samoan.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. What about him?
Marcellus f***ed him up good. Word around the campfire is it was on account of Marcellus Wallace's wife.
So what'd he do, f***?
No, nothing that bad.
Well, then what then?
I gave her a foot massage.
Foot massage? That's it?
Mm-hmm.
Then what'd Marcellus do?
Sent a couple of cats over to his place. They took him out on his patio, threw his ass over the balcony. Fell false stories. That little garden down at the bottom, closed in glass like a greenhouse, fell through that. Since then, he kind of developed a speech impediment.
That's a damn shame. But still, I have to say, you play with matches, you get burned.
What do you mean?
You don't be giving Marcellus Wallace's new bride a foot massage.
You don't think he overreacted?
Well, yeah, that's why I probably didn't expect Marcellus to react the way he did, but he had to expect a reaction.
It was a foot massage. A foot massage is nothing. I give my mother a foot massage.
Have you ever given a foot massage?
Don't be telling me about foot massages. I'm the foot fucking master.
You giving a lot of them?
Shit, yeah. Got my technique down and everything. I don't be tickling or nothing.
Would you give a guy a foot massage?
Fuck you.
I ain't saying it's right, but you saying a foot massage don't mean nothing. I'm saying it does. And look, I've given a million ladies a million foot massages, and they all meant something. We act like they don't, but they do. I mean, that's what's so fucking cool about them. There's a sensuous thing going on where, you know, you don't talk about it, but you know it. She knows it. Marcellus knew it. And Antoine should have better known better. You know what I'm saying?
It's an interesting point. Come on, let's get in character.
It is 27 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of January in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, and welcome to day 12. I was just about to say, by the way, that's why this is the best job in the world, Dawn. Really, not in reference to the Pulp Fiction thing as such, but because just now, as the Pulp Fiction speech was ending, I just saw you furiously just pecking away like one of those chickens that tells your fortune at the fair. And I said, are you looking up facts about the snack food that is going to be the subject of our contest that we'll announce later on today? And you said, no. I'm looking up. Let me just, before I even say what you were looking up, if I just picked like 50 people out of the audience at random and I put them in here and I said, what do you think Dom was just Googling online? What, like in your wildest imaginings, what do you think Dawn was looking up on the internet? I think there's exactly 0% a chance that anybody in that 50 would guess that you were Googling Juggalo hate crimes. And which, don't get me wrong, it's awesome that you were doing so just now. And really, how many professions can you have in which that's a thing you do?
Yeah.
And then it's part of your day's normal events. I mean, it really is. It is a de facto necessity. There's like three jobs, and Harvey Levin's got one of them, and so we got one of the others. Hopefully, you out there, you know, have the third. I think that's me. That's a, I was pounding my fist down for emphasis there.
Yeah.
And I think I actually kicked the. I think I actually kicked one of the things that runs the stuff out into the deal.
Nice.
I'm gonna try not to do that.
Don't do that.
All right.
We need that stuff.
Yeah, it is
that runs the deal.
Rick Emerson Radio Program, thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964, and I'm saying that without any knowledge that the phone is actually on, working, functioning, or, phoning. Let me just check that. And wait. There we go. Awesome. All right. It is, the great on-turning has happened. There you go. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to be a part of today's program. 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, recipes, hate mail, death threats. Maybe just if you'd like to call up and just sort of, just breathe kind of heavily for a while. Maybe do like a little shudder every now and again. You can do that as well. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com if you want to engage with us electronically in that fashion. rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed. Can't you, Don?
I can indeed.
How might somebody do that?
They could email me at don@rickemerson.com.
That's right. That is Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. Let's see. Chat box on the website is open. You can also Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is Rick Emerson Show. That's how you can do that right there via Skype. You know, I had an observation this morning. It was actually, I had an observation, but I told no one about it. It just stayed inside my head. And it was one of those things where about 45 seconds later, this is really apropos of nothing. But I was just, kind of giving out all the various ways that people can contact us. And I was giving out the email and the text and the Skype and the chat thing and then the calls and the whatever. And I was thinking how I would say probably 90% of the communication that we get, not just during the show, but probably in our daily lives now, is actually in text form. And I don't mean just like text on your phone. I mean, it's like electronic, it's like somebody typing something and sending it to you electronically. Lara was making the observation this morning, but she put it in terms that I had really never thought of. She said that really, very rarely now, I mean, all things considered, given the market penetration of your average, of your average cell phone or, of your smartphone, are you still looking up Juggalo hate crimes?
No.
How many Juggalo hate crimes can there possibly be?
There was just one. I just was...
Tell me that there are thousands.
I was specifically looking up... Apparently, there are...
Are there hundreds of them committed every year? Please tell me it's so.
I was just looking at the city of Seattle, and apparently there is, like, rampant gangs of violent Juggalos that roam the streets of Seattle.
Roaming the streets like wild panda cows, wreaking havoc and terror. That's so great. I mean, not for anybody who's the victim of a Juggalo crime, but even then, you got a little something to talk about at the office Christmas party, right? How many people do you know that have been assaulted by Juggalos? Zero. Okay.
Apparently in Seattle, though, it's not uncommon, because the story we're going to read for the Clown Watch later is a Juggalo-related story.
That's so great.
And I was interested because the way the story was written, they said, a gang of Juggalos, as if Juggalos, rather than just being fans of Insane Clown Posse, are actually like Crips or Bloods and gang members.
They are classed as a gang in most cities.
Apparently so, yeah. Oh. And apparently in Seattle, they do walk around in fedoras and they chant things.
Well, they meet all the requirements for being a gang. I mean, it's like and I don't mean that in some like they're, they're hard-ass brothers that are going to come for you. I mean, if you look at the list of criteria that the cops have for what, of course, sort of cops, by the way, FYI.
And probably our pirate reenactors as well.
And the Knights of Columbus. Yeah. Bastards. Anyway, and apparently there are certain, I mean, as much as we like to sit here and poke fun at the Juggalos, and I do.
Yeah.
Because they're just fascinating to me in like 100 different ways. I mean, I know this sounds retarded. I'm already so off point here. But I know this just sounds retarded, but I could sit and talk about Juggalos all day. I really could, because that is a phenomenon that is just, it is so fascinating to me. I mean, there are just dozens.
And there is no Juggalo watch. How is that?
Well, it's a subset of the Clown Watch, but there isn't really enough Juggalo news. We got we're averaging right now one good Juggalo story a year. This year, they menaced some guy in Seattle. Last year, they beat Tila Tequila. So, I mean, right? I mean, if we get, we start getting like one a month, maybe, then I think, we don't even have a Palin watch. What was I going to say? Ba, 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 ba. But apparently in some more nefarious parts of our country, where, by the way, I think life is just kind of cheap anyway, I think the Juggalos actually do cause a little bit of a problem. But that's only because, most people in, Detroit seem to be criminals. And so sometimes you're just a criminal. And if you get 100 criminals, five of those guys, just according to the law of statistics and average, they're going to have grease paint on. So, and probably one of them off a pipe. Anyway, so we'll have some Juggalo news coming up. What was I going to say? Oh, so Laura made this observation. She said that because of the penetration of cell phones, you know, what you don't hear a lot of anymore, relatively speaking, is telephone ringing or ringtones. Now, you hear phones beeping and, you know, squawking and honking and making noise, like email and text and whatever, but you don't really hear a lot of phones ringing these days relative to the number of phones that you are surrounded by every day. And I was thinking about how I was sort of, from my perspective, like we saw the first wave of that happen at KUFO when we instituted that texting program in the morning. And suddenly it was like, what you discover is that about 97% of the people, in the world, given the choice, they just opt, to have a completely one-sided conversation with you, in which they don't have to have any interaction. Which sort of made me feel, you know, it made me feel good because I thought it was just me all this time that didn't actually want to, you know, talk on the phone to people because, you know, and I don't mean here because we've talked about the dynamic of, like, I can talk to people on the phone all day here. I mean, it doesn't bother me at all. But it's like at home, if the phone rings, I look at it with like a barely suppressed groan of just horror and disgust and just fatigue.
That's one of the great things about assigning ringtones to people that you talk to on a regular basis, because the phone can be across the room and you hear the little song or the little sound or something that is associated with a specific person and you go, oh, it's this person I like. I will hurry over and pick up the phone and answer.
Right.
Then you hear like the generic ring that is not assigned to anyone, and that's when you just go,
bill collector.
I don't know what this is, but it can't be good.
Right. And you just, and so what do you automatically do? You just go, well, no, flush. And you hit the button and it goes right into the magic box.
It'll go to voicemail.
You know, here's the great thing about not, I imagine the Android has some similar feature, but you know, the iPhone is that not only can you listen to the messages, you know, in like an order of your own choosing, but you can just delete them without having to wait for the whole, hey, it's a bill collector, I just wanted to say, you know, and then you're like trying to hit the 9 or whatever to like erase it. You can just like swipe your finger right across, gone. So it's just, it's an awesome thing. It's a glorious age in which we live. But it's because her ringtone went off this morning. It's like some Roger Klein song or something. And we realized that, I mean, it's not like she's friendless or whatever, but we realized that was the first time her phone had rung in like, I don't know, like 9 days or something, which is insane because she's had all kinds of communications, freaking New Year's came and went, Christmas came and went, and yet nobody calls, you know, because everybody is just on the texting thing. And that is a positive step forward. That's advancement.
And yet it seems like fewer and fewer people know how to spell.
You know, that's because you have the magic phone doing it for you. Sometimes badly, by the way, as aficionados of damnyouautocorrect.com will know.
Well, Miles, I think that people like you and I think we use words perhaps differently.
You mean correctly?
Maybe differently than a lot of people do, because the phone will make a certain assumption about what the word is that I'm attempting to use.
Yeah.
And I will say, no, that's not what I mean to say here, phone. And then I realized, I guess maybe I just, my grammar is different or the words I use are different.
Well, and also the phone, the iPhone, I know at least, I can't necessarily speak for all the other. We're going to have a patent thing right now. This is going to be a blanket observation, I'm going to say, for the rest of today's show. Today, unless there is reason to believe otherwise or the context alludes to some sort of a different implication, today when I say iPhone, I mean like smartphones in general. So just let's all just, so I don't have to like asterisk everything I say. When you're typing on the iPhone, here's the thing. It's not actually just trying to predict your words based on spelling. It's based on the last letter you typed and its relative position on the keyboard as well.
Yeah.
So what it thinks you might have hit, or based on the combination of letters that came earlier, what combination you might have been trying to type, even, this is the amazing thing about it, even if every letter has been wrong so far. So, like, if you're trying to type, you know, Q-W-E-R, but instead you type A-S-D, it'll guess the F, and sometimes it'll actually guess the R and then change the whole thing retroactively. It's kind of, it really is just sort of mind-boggling. And now, and the thing about
I find it ironic, though, that my iPhone, when I was posting to Facebook, I attempted to write in the word geekiness. Now, granted, this is my iPhone. And it did not recognize the word geekiness.
Did it try to spell it with a Y, or did it not recognize it at all?
It didn't recognize it. It changed it to meekness.
Well, I could see that. I wonder if the, what I don't really know is whether the onboard dictionary, you know, the phones, whether it actually learns. In other words, does it get an update from Apple, like in the firmware, or does it actually learn from your typing patterns? And does it learn from A, your mistakes? And then also, you know, when you're typing and it kicks up the autocorrect, the suggestion, you can X that out.
Yeah.
And it'll learn that you don't want to type that word in that context. Like my voice recognition software learns, which is a little freaky. When you close it down, when you exit out of a Dragon Dictate, it actually stops for a second and goes, hold on, please. And it like bundles up all of the things that you have corrected it on and all of the things. Plus, here's a freaky thing about Dragon Dictate for the full computer version. You can actually just... You can just pull up a bunch of documents you've written over the years and just import them all, and it'll study things that you've written to learn how you speak. So I could just take like scripts for Outlook Portland, or just the news stories I've written, or just anything, letter, email. You can just import emails by the hundreds. I could import my whole inbox, and it'll learn how I speak based on that. It's freaky. I mean, which is why it knows how to spell. That's why it sprung that thing one day of knowing how to spell VISO, which is like one of the moments where I just stopped and I looked around my office a little bit to see if like Alan Funt had returned from the grave just to F with me. I don't even know what I was saying. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Or Don Taylor can be emailed. Don, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. Coming up today, Juggalo Watch as part of your Clown Watch. Also, let's see, Hick Watch coming up. And we'll do the top five. I had to write this one down to make sure that I can do it twice in a row. Top five once inescapable songs about which you have probably forgotten. Bam. There you go. Coming up today. Top five once inescapable songs, which is a wholly subjective list, of course.
Huh.
So you know what I'm doing? I'm doing a little iPhone autocorrect action on the top five. This is just my guess. So
only on history.
All of these, yes, will be true for some folks. Some of them true for all folks. Or maybe you're the exception. So who knows? But the top five once inescapable songs about which you have probably forgotten. And then suddenly you go, oh my God, I haven't thought of this song forever. God, this song blows. That'll be your reaction to almost everything. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Tuesday.
The Consumer Electronics Show opens this week. An insect census shows that we're running out of bumblebees. And a man is beaten with frozen meat.
Really?
Yeah.
Was this by Juggalos? This is not part of the Juggalo story,
no,
is it?
No, this is a completely different beating.
By the way, I just want to read this. This is you. Tell me I don't have my finger on the cultural pulse. Tell me that Rick Emerson isn't holding a virtual finger aloft and sensing the way that the Zeitgeistian wind is blowing. All caps, this comment. I would subscribe for a full year right now if you devoted one show to Juggalos. I mean, I would send you the money today. Just saying.
Okay.
It's what the people are interested in.
I'll tell you what. You send that money today. We actually see that in the PayPal. We will do a special Juggalo show. An all Juggalo show. It may be a supplementary show.
I was going to say, let's clarify.
Like maybe on a Saturday.
Yeah, like a Sunday from 4 a.m. to 5:30 a.m. I'm just saying, because I think that might be a net loss for us. That'd be like the Timmy Ryan show would have been. So I just, I think that...
But I would come in, if somebody wanted to pay us, wanted to subscribe for an entire year, right now, I would be willing to come in for, like, say, an hour and a half on Saturday and do an all Juggalo show.
All right. Okay, let's see. Oh, see, no, you can't weasel. I knew there'd be a catch, he says.
That's no catch.
The catch is you have to pay us. That's really the catch.
You said if we did a show, I'm offering to do a show just for you, sir.
So just it's up to you know. This is between you and the God of your understanding. You must weigh whether or not it is worth your yearly subscription. Here's the thing, and because and even though we would do it at a different time slot,
yeah.
You know, you could listen to it at a time of your choosing, what
right.
with the technology and the science and all.
And you could like share it with your friends and say, hey, this is because of me. They did this for me.
With your many Juggalo colleagues.
They were working for me.
You could bring over some of the hottie Juggalettes in the neighborhood and you could make a party of it. We've talked about this. You have a, I don't know, you have an acquaintance who is a Juggalo.
No, I really don't. I used to live about
you
a block
do,
away from... Do I?
You do. That's the thing.
Do
maybe
I?
Maybe you're unaware. Maybe he is... I'm not saying he's closeted in his juggalotum. Juggalotum? Juggalug-a-ding-dong?
I mean, like not just somebody who listens to Insane Clown Posse, but somebody who, like, puts on the...
Full-on juggalo.
Really?
Full-on J to the UGG.
I did not know this.
A to the LLO. Wow. Now, you know, and here's what I mean. You know this person. You, I think, I am. I would swear on a stack of Bibles, you've spent what we could call social time. You are certainly, you'd know him if you walked in here, I think.
Is this a poker playing acquaintance?
No. No, he's somebody you would know, I mean, at least secondarily through the show.
Okay.
The show is the sort of, the show is the hub around which the spokes go in this sort of, you know, in this sort of knowing each other kind of thing. So I don't even know what I'm saying now. I'm lost in a metaphor of a thing. Do you want to know or do you want to? You'll never guess, though.
Okay, tell me. Yeah,
you could try to guess if you want. It's a, I'll say this. It's you know.
Is it Richie Bristol?
No. He's not an employee of the show. He never worked for the show. But he is. I'd say he's a P1. He's a longtime listener. Known, and not only this, not only is he a long time, and he has not been...
Is it Mailman Chris?
No, he is not, he's not a poker playing guy.
Okay.
He has not been in the studio since we started this iteration, but he is known to you, I would almost freaking guarantee it, and he is known, I would say known to the audience, you know, in general. He is known to a large degree to the audience. The audience is familiar with him. His deeds, if not by his legal name.
I am stumped. I don't know.
Here's the really great thing. Here's the amazing thing is, I know that you know who he is because he intersected with you professionally once before you had this job. Oh, it's just all, it's
was
so
it the,
tantalizing
is it the
now.
Other mailman guy?
No.
Because he used to be over at KBOO, so I bumped into him.
There are many mailmen. He is not one of them, to the best of my knowledge, unless he's changed careers. Oh, it's all so splendiferous.
I really don't know.
We'll reveal the answer after this. We've done the headlines, right?
Yes.
All right. The fantastic. So we will. So we've got all of that. We've got all of that coming up today, ladies and germs. Plus, later on today, like I don't know, maybe around 2:30 or so, we are going to be. We are going to be unveiling the first clue in our Name That Snack contest. That is the Name That Snack contest, which is provided to you.
It sounded like you just said Name That Snot.
I got a little thing going on.
Because you're trying to say snack and contest
it's
at the
thing
same time.
It's a thing that's like post-nasal drip, but not quite. I don't know what that is. But the yes, the Name That Snack contest, we will be giving the first clue later on today. It'll be around, I don't know, like 2:30 or so that we will be in that. So that'll be coming up. That, of course, is sponsored by EH Vending. EHVending.com is their website. EHVending.com. You can contact either James or Joshua right there if you are the owner, operator, the manager, the shot maker, the decision maker. If you are the man or perhaps the man behind the man with a plan in a four-door sedan, you can call EH Vending. And again, you can go online, find all their contact information, more about their business at EHVending.com. They provide vending services. That is the machine that holds consumable items of an almost staggering variety. They provide vending services to business of every size, shape, and variety. Find out more at EHVending.com. All right, I think I've teased everything here. Clown Watch, Hick Watch, Name That Snack, first clue coming up later on today. And so the deal with that, by the way, is that we will reveal one clue about a snack food. We will do so every weekday, and the first person to correctly guess the specific snack food by name via snack@rickemerson.com will win a gift basket that is filled with a bountiful cornucopia of goods. And it's going to be a whole variety of snack items, vending-style snack items.
Yeah.
So they're being kept under lock and key at this moment in a vault with walls, the thickness of which cannot be overstated.
It's actually just a cardboard box on the other side of the room.
It's in the corner of the room over there. It's being held
shut
with packing tape.
It's a very big box.
So that is all on the way, plus the top five once inescapable songs about which you have probably forgotten. But all of this, by the way, is just a preface. It's just build up to ask, when was your... So you watched True Grit on your 55-inch television.
Right.
That was your first experience. That was the first thing you watched on it, like all told. How was your first, like... I mean, have you gotten to the first full day and night of living with the 55-inch TV, and how was it?
Pretty much. It's still very startling to walk into my apartment and go, giant TV, because, I mean, it's just right there. It's kind of oppressive. It really is. I honestly wish there were, like, I could put, like, a big Japanese screen up in front of it or like, throw something over it, because it really does just dominate the room.
Do you find that it's just, does it feel like it's gaudy in some way?
I think oppressive is really the word. Just kind of like, dear God.
Like it just dominates the room?
Well, yeah, and then today we've got this, I'm having a problem with my water heater. And so I talked to the people at the office of my apartment complex, and they were like, well, we're going to have to, you know, we'll have a guy come over at 11:30. And I'm like, well, no one will be here at 11:30. And they're like, well, we're the apartment complex. We can let ourselves in. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, well, sure. And so now, I swear to God, I had this thought where I was like, this guy's going to walk into my apartment and there's just going to be a giant TV.
Do you feel like, is it the TV so large that when people come over, are you going to feel compelled to tell them that you didn't buy it?
Yes.
You're going to be like, no, a friend of mine gave that to me. Well, I would never have purchased such a horribly large television for myself.
Well, because I'm perpetually broke. And everyone I know.
You don't want to be that rent-to-own jackass with a TV the size of a...
Everybody knows that I'm just poor as dirt and just living paycheck to paycheck and scraping to get my bills paid, and now all of a sudden, out of the blue, I've got this giant TV. So, like, when I talked about it on, like, Facebook and stuff, I had to keep mentioning, I got a free TV. I keep talking, here's a giant, in parentheses, free TV, because I really don't want people thinking that, you know, Don's always complaining about not having any money, but they got this giant TV at Christmas time.
Seriously, because then if you ever needed to borrow money or if you ever needed any sort of, like, financial, I don't know, just any sort of help, like, in any way, the first thing that would happen is, like, the TV would be the picture that popped up on, like, the iPhone screen of their mind.
Yes.
Who's on the phone? It's Dawn. She needs money. And they would just picture, like, bing, hugest TV ever.
Is she broke because she spent all her money on a giant TV?
That's exactly what would happen. Yeah. So you are right to do that, because that is forestalling against a future denial of monies should you need them.
And I just don't want to, because the thing is, I would never have bought a TV this big. I really wouldn't have. I like the idea of having, we had talked about maybe going up to something like maybe a 40 or maybe 42 tops for watching movies, and that would be just sort of extremely luxurious. But I just can't even imagine, unless I lived in a big giant house and really did have just assholes of money, buying a 55-inch television, because it really is really big.
Yeah, I think that's a bit, that's just because, here's the thing, it's because A, you're not used to it, and B, because everything else you have is from an earlier, less gaudy time in your life, I think.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's...
And we've been paring things down over the last few years. You know, we sold our house, we moved out of the house, we got rid of about two-thirds of the crap we owned, we moved into an apartment, and even in the apartment, we've, like, taken, like, boxes and boxes of books to Powell's and sold them. We've gotten rid of most of our DVDs. You know, we've really been trying to, like, just very pare down and simplify our life. And now all of a sudden, giant TV!
Okay, but you know, you just hit on something. You know, this had actually never occurred to me until you made this observation. You know what else that makes the TV seem so huge? It is the only consumer electronics device that's gotten bigger. Everything else has gotten smaller.
That's
your
true.
Cell phone has gotten smaller. Your computer has gotten smaller. Laptops have gotten smaller. Gaming systems have gotten smaller. I mean, they do more, but they're tiny. The footprint is minuscule. I mean, they got that MacBook Air that's like, I mean, it's like the width of a credit card or something. But the televisions, meanwhile, all of the extra space in the house, like every inch that you have reclaimed by shrinking down, like by getting rid of your wall phone and getting rid of your huge Tandy computer, it's all gone to the TV.
Well, like, there's a photo that I posted to Facebook last night, because I was showing that I was watching Toy Story 3. And honest to God, it's like the face of Big Brother just like looming over me on my wall.
You got to take another photo, but you got to put an object of known size in the foreground to give it a sense of scale.
Well, here's kind of a shove the phone over. There you can see the phone it on the table with the Army of Darkness movie poster.
Okay, that is large.
So you can actually see kind of how large it is in comparison to the movie poster that's right next to it.
Is this True Grit that you're watching right here?
Yes.
Okay. By the way, Yeah, no, that's...
Yeah, no, it's like...
There's no getting around that. That's a giant television.
It's almost 3 feet tall by, like, 4 feet wide.
Excellent.
It's freaking huge.
Okay, now, do you have a game system?
I don't. I used to have a PS2.
We
got rid of it, and so now, well, yeah.
I'm that guy now, where I'm like, well, you gotta get a game system, baby. You got a 55-inch television.
That, no,
you
that
gotta...
w- Yes, Thomas Gill said that on Facebook.
You've got a credit card? There's a store right down the street.
Well, last night I plugged in because I wanted to watch something that was loaded onto my laptop. So I went and got a spare VGA cable, and I hooked it into the
back. By the way, how hot is it that you have a spare VGA cable? Guys, am I right? Come on now. Hey.
Well, I talked to Patrick, and I was like, well, I'll just take the VGA cable off of the flat screen monitor in the other room. And Pat goes, well, I don't think you can. It's like dedicated to the monitor. I'm going, no, honey, you just pop the back off. It's just the curvy thing.
You
on
make
the...
it sound like you're married to Marty Moose. Sorry, folks.
But I said,
I don't know how to hook anything up.
So I went back and I like just popped the back off of the Sony monitor and just unplugged it. He's like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. I was like, yeah. So I took it in there and I got back behind and we did this whole thing because he tries to be really manly and do all this stuff. And then it almost always turns out me going, do you want me to do it, honey? And then he's like, okay, sure. And then I go back and I go, no, it's this plug right here. And I just plug it right in. And he goes,
he's just out front with his big ears coming out of the top of his hat, driving a car.
He goes, I tried that.
Lost my brain.
Yeah. But anyway, we got it plugged in, and I plugged in the laptop, and I started watching. We started watching, like, Scott Pilgrim or something. And I turned it off, and I looked up, and then of course, the wallpaper, just the desktop screen for my laptop, was on the 55-inch monitor. And Patrick went, oh.
It all became clear to him.
And I went, what? And he goes, well, that's so you could watch anything that's on your computer. I said, yes, honey. It's like.
He had not put two and two together that you could just put your computer image right on the screen.
Yeah, he was thinking TV, game system, maybe watching movies,
right.
DVD player. It hadn't occurred to him that basically this is just a giant 55-inch computer monitor.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, oh yeah, honey. And then I turned on Plants vs. Zombies. I'm like, you can play Plants vs. Zombies really big. And his eyes got huge.
Now, here's the question, though.
I saw wheels turning.
If you run, the question, if you took your iPhone, if you hooked your iPhone to the television, does it kill the display on your iPhone?
I don't know. I don't know what you would use to
It's like a composite video out cable, which is just it goes into the bottom, and then it's Apple, of course, because they just like everybody else, they F you by making their own cord. But there's a cable that goes into the bottom, and then it goes to either a composite cable or like a component cable, and it plugs into the.
Yeah,
it's a whole thing. They'll sell you. You go to the store, and they'll tell you. But here's why though. Here's why I ask that, because I downloaded that game Rage from id.
I have that
and
too.
And I got the HD version like an idiot, even though I'm playing it on a thing the size of a credit card right now. But my whole thing is, and I was thinking, and that game had exactly the desired effects. I'm playing it on my iPhone, and it's the only game I own for the iPhone because I have an Xbox. Gaming on the iPhone is a thing that holds limited appeal to me. I basically just did it as like a novelty, and plus I love id Software, and I'm a mark. But my thing was, this would be great on the iPad. But now I'm thinking, if I can run that into the TV, then I can play the game on the screen, then de facto using the iPhone as the controller, but playing the game on the screen. And how freaking awesome would that be? The answer, unbelievably awesome. So that's the thing you got to see. You got to see if you can actually run the video out from your iPhone onto the screen without killing the display or the touch.
Yeah.
But even if you did, you'd need the touch interface still. I think that would work. I think you can play Rage on the iPhone on your screen while using your iPhone as the controller.
You probably could.
That is awesome. That's the best thing ever. See, that right there is almost enough to point me in the direction of getting a larger TV, because then you think, then you get the 99-cent game on the huge-ass monitor that you could be playing.
So I got up this morning, and Patrick got up before I did, and he made coffee and did stuff, and I came out, and the VGA thing was plugged back into the laptop. I had unplugged it before I went to bed, and so I was kind of like, so what were you doing? Because I'm thinking, okay, he like got up early and he was like watching porn on my laptop, which he's forbidden from doing, by the way.
Really?
I have this terror of him downloading something and me getting a virus in the only working computer that I use for business.
All right,
It has nothing to do with me having a problem with porn.
Yeah.
It has to do with me like not wanting to mess up my laptop, which he did to another laptop that was his twice. So it's like he is forbidden from downloading anything onto my laptop.
Please to tell real briefly the story that when you say he's done it twice.
He sent it twice. He had a laptop.
To yours or to his?
No, to his.
To his. So.
And somebody came and fixed it and debugged it and got all the viruses out of it.
Well,
and then,
here's your problem. And then it's just a woman getting filled out like an application.
Well, fortunately, it was a really good friend of ours. And I said, you know, Patrick's laptop has just frozen up and shut down and won't work.
It's all full of dildos.
Because he was downloading things he shouldn't, like, I don't know, Japanese tentacle porn or something.
And tentacle
I don't know. And it got all full of viruses and crap. And so the guy, this friend of ours, you know, cleaned everything up and cleared everything out and debugged his laptop. And like a year later, the same thing happens. And I'm like, I'm not calling him again. It, once is embarrassing enough. Now it's like, now you're just out of luck.
You know what they ought to make? They ought to make a porn-specific computer cleaner. I mean, they probably do. Where you can just say, deporn my machine. Yeah. And it's something that is tailored. And they charge like $199 for it because you'd pay it. You know? And then it goes through and it knows exactly what to look for. It's just tailor-made to look for porn.
So, yeah. So I get up and he's plugged the thing in. So my immediate fear is like he's been doing something
on the 55-inch screen.
And it turned out that, no, he was doing two things. One, he was watching his anime. Because he has this one anime thing that he follows, like, every week. So he was excited to watch the anime really, really big. And he was reading his email.
And on a 55-inch screen.
And that's what I said. I said, you were reading your email on the big-ass TV? And he just looked happy. And he said, yeah! Like, it was the most exciting thing ever.
You know, I don't think I could do things like that because it would be uncomfortably similar to sitting in a conference room for like some sort of a, you know, quarterly productivity meeting or something. I will say,
I did watch some of The Wire on it, though, and The Wire is...
It's a beautifully shot show.
It really is beautifully shot. Yeah. It is very cinematic. Yeah. And so, yeah, it looks gorgeous, like, on the big TV.
There's specific episodes, and, you know, that show is very, you know, it's not like a verite or whatever, but it's a very stripped-down show in some ways, but it's just... But Baltimore, or at least the sections of Baltimore which are used for The Wire, are sort of beautiful in their crumbling horror. You know, they're so awful and just so decrepit. Just a side note, one of the great things about working on The Wire apparently was that you, like, no production design was required. They would just show up and, like, and depending on whether it was day or night, maybe they wouldn't even need lights, but they would just basically just show up and they would just shoot because the city just loves David Simon. And they just gave him, they're like, anything you want to film, have at it. And there was like, he said, he was like we never had to dress anything to make it look all beat down. He's like, the only time we ever had to dress a set is if we wanted to make a neighborhood look like it was not firebombed and filled with crack dealers.
Well, I've read a lot of John Waters' essays and things that he's written in his memoirs about growing up in Baltimore and the things he loves about Baltimore and just the crazy, decrepit insanity of Baltimore. So it is a really unique place.
By the way, just so we can, I don't know, there's nothing else in particular we need to do here, but otherwise we're just going to sit and talk about your 55-inch television. And here's the thing.
And by the way, I do need to come up with a name for it. I need to come up with some way to refer to it because Patrick and I have already started just referring to it as the big-ass TV.
Yeah.
And we need to come up with some, you know, more elegant way to describe it.
I think if I were you, I would probably call it the 55-inch television all the time. Just stare at people for a while. Just sort of, you know.
I was watching that on my 55-inch television.
What?
You know, and then just, I'll be like, oh, then I got free because I don't have any money.
Yeah, just give a little, like, Brooklyn afterward. all right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Coming up later on, we got the top five songs that were once inescapable about which you have probably forgotten. Clown Watch, Hick Watch, First Clue in Name That Snack. Incidentally, thank you. In case you're wondering what I did last night, and it's not like you were, but for the sake of, you know, whatever comedic expediency, we'll pretend that you were. What I did basically I just sat on my ass. You know, and I was just, I don't know, I was, again, I seem to be doing laundry all the time recently. But I was doing laundry, and I don't know, I'm within sight of the end of season 6 of House. And then I'm gonna quit until like the next season or two are done. You know, and I'm gonna purge for a while. But I'm almost done. So I was watching House and answering email and, you know, whatever. Again, so while you're with your 55-inch TV, we're like totally in Tomorrowland. You're with your 55-inch television. I'm at home with my Time Life operator thing from my magical voice recognition software, which not only, by the way, not only did, like, lets me dictate emails, I can just run my entire computer from it. Because I can be like, open mail, compose letter, send, close, search Google. There's actually, like, I can just say, like, search Google for tentacle porn, and I swear to God, it'll do it. It will open the browser if it's not open. It'll go to Google, and it'll search for the phrase tentacle porn. And I mean, you really do see, like, you could, now for the first time, I think we are standing on a cliff or a mountain or a hill or a thing that's higher than another thing. And you can see the spongy Wall-E world, and you can see how we're going to get there.
Yes.
The fact that I can sit on my big ass at home in my chair with the ass groove and just go, computer, search tentacle porn, and then it'll do it. And I literally, not figuratively, literally don't have to lift a finger while it does that. I just sit there and just move my mouth.
Well, the first time I ever saw that really applied in a way that seemed I understood the point of it is I had a friend who was a graphic designer, and he worked with Photoshop a lot. And Photoshop involves a lot of, like, pulling down menus to get to other menus, to get to other menus, to get to filters, to do stuff. And he actually got the voice recognition software and, and programmed it to do certain
like
functions.
Like macros to do stuff.
Yeah, in Photoshop that he did all the time. So he wasn't constantly, like, mousing and pulling down and pulling down and pulling down. He could just, you know... He could just say edit, and then the edit menu would come down, and he'd say, you know, edit, is it blur, you know, plus two,
you know,
and
the,
it would just do it.
One of the best, things that I use that voice recognition software for, and it's a thing that sounds dumb, like it just makes you sound freaking lazy until you realize how many hours of your life you spend putting different signature files on emails depending on who they're for. You know, because if it's something,
that's not a problem that all of us have.
I'm just saying, but if you got one for work and if you got a work SIG file and it's like, and, you know, but sometimes you're answering email that is like, you're answering something from home, but it's going to a person that intersects with your business life and you want to put the full, like, how you can be reached. So I can actually just say, like, you know, like show signature, and it'll be like, and it'll put all the show information at the end, all that stuff. It's amazing. So I just sat there and I was answering email, watching House, and then, you know, one of my things is to shred. I love shredding me some stuff, except I can't shred right now because Aaron Duran, so his wife, they apparently don't own a shredder. And but they're getting ready. They've got tax stuff or, you know, whatever it is you shred. They got a bunch of stuff piled up. And so rather than buying a shredder right now, because they can run a little pricey, they came over to borrow mine. I wasn't, and I'm not complaining. It's not like it bothers me. But I'm saying, like, I wasn't asked about it. It was like I just came home and the shredder was gone. And I said, baby, where's the, because Laura's broken multiple shredders. I don't know how, but she does it. And I said, baby, where's the shredder? And she said, Aaron and Jen borrowed it. And, of course, I'm immediately under the whole, did you tell him not to put more than six sheets of paper? And she's like, yes, I know. No more than six sheets of paper. You know, paper clips, but not CDs. Fine. And I said, okay. And then she said, and they left rent on your chair. And so I go into the office, and then just sitting on the chair in my home office are just big bags of chocolate peanut butter Bugles. That's how lame and predictable I am. I mean, it was nice of them, but that's how sad I am that they came to borrow my shredder, and it wasn't even a question of, like, what they would give me in exchange. Have some Bugles, fatty. And so they just leave
me. You might be annoyed by this. How can we buy his affections?
What's the easiest thing they can do? Distract him with food. Like I'm a grizzly bear that you're trying to get away from the tent. So that's what I did. I ate Bugles. I went, computer, search tentacle porn, threw a mouthful of Bugles, and I watched House. And that's pretty much it. I will end this segment, and we'll get to the news. I'll end it by revealing the existence of your Juggalo friend.
Okay.
And even if you didn't know him in any other way or context, you will know him via, as I said, one of your former jobs.
Pits and Barter?
No. Oh, God, no.
Okay.
Well, but you could see it, though, couldn't you?
Almost. I could almost see it.
Well, because he's a Kiss fan. And let's be honest, there's not too many degrees separating Juggalos from Kiss fans. I can admit that. That's one of those reasons. That, to me, is one of the indications. Like, no matter how old I am chronologically, I'm always on the lookout to make sure I don't become my own dad. You know, you don't want to become your own grandfather. You know, your kids and your racket.
Peter on Family Guy going to the Kiss convention.
Yeah, that's like, I try to keep like a gauge on my own immaturity. And I try very, here's the other thing I try not to do. I try very hard not to be a hypocritical, aging Gen Xer. You know, that's not music. That Rednecks and that Cotton Eye Joe, that was music. You know, and just being some dick. I can see that there is really very little difference between, you know, in terms of aesthetic and appeal and the grassroots phenomenon of it, in other words, it's no worse to be a Juggalo than to be a Kiss fan, you know, who paints your face like Ace Frehley. Let's be honest.
It's
same
not
thing.
That different than, you know, me going to clubs with all my punk rock friends and everybody putting an assload of Aquanet in their hair to make it spike up and and wearing black lipstick.
Or dressing like Madonna, you know, putting a bunch of black rubber bands on your arm. You know, costume's a freaking costume.
Yeah.
So I got no problem with that. But so I could see Pitzenbarger doing it. No. It is Chris Boba Fett.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And except if nothing else, he was in the photo that you know for the Mercury piece.
And I've met him.
Yeah, and so yeah, and you know the thing is, and I'm not trying to say anything bad about Juggalos like as people, like as a whole, but it's like you see him and he's a good looking guy, seems relatively normal, popular with the ladies, can dance. You know, and it's like you know, but he's like a full on screaming Juggalo. I swear to God, at one point, I don't know if it's still there, on his MySpace page, I swear to Christ, there was actual Juggalo poetry. And I'm not making it up. And it wasn't done, like, ironically. And I asked him about it one time, and it's like, and the thing is, I said, so you're a Juggalo. And I just sort of asked quizzically, because I think I'd heard it, but I didn't know. And he responded, he goes, yes, I am. And he said it, like, so, like, matter-of-factly and good-naturedly, that if I had been inclined to make fun of him, I wasn't going to anymore because I would have felt like a dick. Because he was just like completely like, he was just, it was like asking like, you know, so you like Highlander, you know, or whatever. Like he was just totally, so he is that thing.
Huh.
So.
What do you know?
I mean, you know, it's just, which is weird, right? Like you didn't know.
I did not know that.
You never know when somebody's a Juggalo, Dawn.
Maybe I could ask him what that thing is about magnets.
Nobody knows. See, that's the thing. It can't be known or understood by anyone. Wouldn't you give anything if the Juggalos had, like, their own show where it was just called, like How the F Did... I guess they do. It's called The Rick Emerson Show. It's just called How the F Does This Simple Thing Work That Everybody Understands But Me. Never mind. That show is here. Speaking of that, at the news desk, here is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The Consumer Electronics Show kicks off in Las Vegas on
awesome.
Thursday. Technology writer John Sutter explains why the CES is such a big deal in technology circles.
Sutter. Consumer Electronics Show tends to set sort of the trends for technology and electronics for the whole year. And so I think that's why, you know, gadget geeks and people like that get so excited about it, is because we see a lot of new products coming out at CES, and we see a lot of new ideas emerging.
Here's the thing: they've tried to train the voice number 3 out of him, but you can hear it if you listen to a whole lot, like a
shiny, a slang term for great use in the television series Firefly and the movie Serenity.
And then you listen to
the Consumer Electronics Show tends to set sort of the trends for technology and electronics for the whole year, and so I think that's why
you can hear it lurking in the background.
Yeah.
That's they've done a little Pygmalion on him, but it's still there.
Yeah, he's one of those. He sounds like he's one of those good looking, well socialized geeks, but the geek is there nonetheless.
He's the guy they put at the front counter at Fry's.
Yeah. He's the guy at the Genius Bar.
Exactly.
Sutter says in years past, the CES has brought us a number of products that we now use every day.
Where HDTV came out. It's where DVDs came out.
It's, is that true?
Where the Nintendo Entertainment System, you know, got one of its first looks. So a lot of the, you know, the tech products, if you look back over the decades that have been really big and sort of, you know, shaped our culture and all kinds of things, you know, a lot of them came out at CES or got a first look there.
He says the hot item, like our friend Aaron Duran, he says the hot item at this year's CES will likely be rivals to Apple's iPad.
This year it's expected to be tablet mania. People are all excited about iPad competitors.
Okay. I guess that's the end of that. Tablet mania, by the way, is a thing that nobody actually says. That's a phrase that doesn't really exist.
I was trying to find a
picture. Did you just belch into the microphone?
Yes, I did, apparently.
I'm going to go back and sample that.
Please
don't. We're
going
to play it over and over and over again. When we're not busy playing this.
So, apparently this...
You got a picture of him?
Yeah, that's John Sutter right there.
Oh,
he looks kind of like Will Wheaton.
Yeah, I was going to say you're like a young Jonathan Colton, maybe.
Yeah.
He's got this, the geeky bespectacled thing going on. All right.
The American bumblebee population has fallen 96% over the past several decades, according to the so-called National Insect Census.
That's a lie. That's just not true. That's not true. I'm telling you right now, that's not true.
But it's an insect census.
You know, we can't even count the number of people, and they can talk. And, like, say, you know, and read newspapers that say, we're going to be coming to count you. They don't fly away, most of them, when you walk toward them with a clipboard.
This was a 3-year study of the 4 most common kinds of bumblebees.
Uh-huh.
And they found that not only had the total number diminished, but the geographic diversity of the bees had fallen by 23%.
If we were losing bees that fast, this is like that thing. What is that beeping sound?
Oh, I'm sorry. Apparently.
Did somebody leave their iPhone on?
I left my... Well, I turned off... I thought I turned the sound off. I'm sorry. Somebody took a turn on Words with Friends.
Okay. Do you need to stop and respond?
No.
Okay, just checking.
No, I just turned off the phone, and I'll play my turn later.
By the way, to people who send me Words with Friends invitations, I see them. I'm just not answering.
Yeah, you don't enjoy games.
No, they make me angry.
Games,
so. Here's the thing. If that were true, this is like that thing they say every year where, you know, it's like you'll see these studies. Well, you know, every second, 500 acres of rainforest disappear, which is like if that were true, like it would be gone. It'd all be gone. There'd be none left. If they were vanishing that quickly, but they'd be gone by the end of the show today.
They said it's fallen 96% over the past several decades.
What is several? Do they say, is several like two or is it like 100
well,
decades?
Well, this doesn't say, but this is just a story about the insect census. This isn't the census itself. Anyway, experts aren't sure exactly why the bee population is declining, although similar findings have been reported all over the world. But they believe it's due to a combination of new diseases, changing habitats around cities, and increasing use of pesticides. Bees pollinate up to 90% of the world's commercial plants, according to The Guardian, and up to a third of the food we eat is a result of their efforts, including coffee and most fruits and vegetables. So see, no bees, no coffee, Rick Emerson.
I see. You're trying to make you're making the global personal.
By the paper's count, bees contribute $40.63 billion a year to the global economy.
Yeah, but, you know, we can get illegal immigrants for that.
To pollinate plants?
Here's the thing. They're an industrious people. They will do jobs that bees won't do. You know, domestic bees, I mean.
I don't think that anybody can really do the jobs that bees do.
Well, I'm saying with the right motivation. I don't know. I'm just saying. It just seems to me like that's...
Jesus, flit from flower to flower, picking up pollen on your pants and dropping it as you go.
Now, see, that is Don Taylor who made the assumption that I was speaking about a person of Mexican or Hispanic ancestry or origination.
Okay, Gunter. Flit from flower to flower.
Hey, speaking of foreigners, we didn't mention the new country in which now I think this is our first. I think this is our first subscriber in this country. Now I can't say this is our first listener because it's we've been on the World Wide Web, which is of course worldwide, you know, for however long. We were running some weird bootleg stream of this show, like. Literally, I swear to God, literally out of a computer that I think was hidden on the floor underneath Bruce Agler's desk at KOTK because I think we were not technically allowed to stream. I think our parent company at the time, and I think also the company that provided some of our programming, I won't specify, but I think the parent company that provided some of our syndicated programming, I don't think we were allowed to stream. And so I think literally he ran it as like a hidden application in the background on a thing that you like had to open a drawer to find out of his office. Like
but it was like available on the internet.
Yes, but see, but the thing is, like the company that owned us at the time, Fisher Communications, they were terrified of the internet. They just didn't. They didn't get it.
So they were just never ever going to like look there.
You remember how it was with certain people up until like
that's true.
In like 1998. Like the best way to hide something was to put it on the internet because they would never be able to log on and find it. And well, and I'll just say that this company, this other company that provided some of our syndicated programming, they were wholly opposed to syndicating any of their content on the internet. They resisted until like 2005 or something. But yeah, so like there was like this tiny computer that was like stuck in a closet in his office or something that syndicated our, you know, put our show online. So, but we do want to say that, let's see, so we've got this new subscription. This is Oliver Milne, M-I-L-N-E. So that's Milne, I believe. Oliver Milne listening today from, do you want to guess or do you want me to tell you?
Newfoundland.
No, you should try to get. You could take like 3-4 shots here. You should try to narrow it down, I guess.
Botswana.
So you could start with continent.
Oh, you want me to narrow it down?
Well, I don't care. I'm just saying.
Is it a European?
Unless
nation.
You're just guessing to fill the time. European, yes.
Is it a smallish European country?
I don't know, but I think so. I believe it's small.
Is it Holland?
No.
Okay.
Are you done?
I'm done.
It's Scotland. Somebody
Scotland.
In Glasgow. That is in Scotland, right?
Yes.
Hurrah.
Yes, it is.
Hello, Oliver Milne. I am Rick
Can
Emerson.
Can you do a Scottish accent? Or
no,
would that sound Australian,
I
too?
I'm not going to do that. Listen, I'd like to welcome Oliver Milne to the land of the ugly American. Hello, Oliver Milne in Glasgow. Thank you for subscribing, and thank you for your support, and spread the word. And now
we loved your shortbread.
We have said, do they make short? Now, is that where shortbread originates?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
yeah,
are they the folks who created that? Like,
yes.
A shortbread cookie comes
indeed.
From there?
Yes.
Is that what? Now, let me ask you this. Is like in Lord of the Rings, I've always assumed that the Lambis bread was sort of a like a shortbread. Do you know if that's true?
I've always assumed it was, too. Something between shortbread and hardtack. I assumed it probably wasn't
that I don't know
sweet.
What hardtack is. I thought that's a thing he gave to horses.
Hardtack is a very, very hard...
Like a biscuit?
Biscuit kind of a cookie thing. And that's the thing. It would travel well because it was very, very hard. And that's why you would, like, make up a bunch of coffee and then soak your hardtack in the coffee just so you could actually eat it.
It's like those survival biscuits they used to have
yeah.
in the 60s.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, we've said at one point that if we got 50 subscribers in Australia that we would travel there and do the show from there. Should we make a similar pledge about Scotland?
Yes. I'd love to go to Scotland. So
I say, realizing that we would have to figure out later how exactly we would do it.
Hmm.
Well, what number of – how big is Scotland? I mean, what kind of population do you think we're talking about there?
Hmm.
If only there were a way to –
If only there were a way to find that out.
I say, talking about somebody who's actually listening to me speak right now over the internet. If only there were – if only we could determine – well, while you're looking it up, Don, let me just say that the Rick Emerson Show today and every day made possible not only by fine subscribers like Oliver Milne of Glasgow, but also by our fine business partners, including but not limited to Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com. Although, you know, I mean, if you're calling from like the pub or whatever, you know, down the village, you're probably out of luck. I mean, unless it really pays a lot. SquiresElectric.com is the website for Squires Electric, the company. You can also call them 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Let's say, for example, that you're not Don Taylor and you don't just keep a spare VGA cable sitting around because, you lack that particular component in your brain, as apparently Patrick does. You say to yourself, wherever shall I go? Whatever shall I do? However shall I watch this porn on a huge screen? You want to call Squires Electric. Less for the porn, more for the cabling and the hooking up and the whatever. 503-252-1609. They've been in Portland for 12 years. And, of course, Joe Squires actually from here. Spent some time in the military, in the service, working on nuclear subs where I swear to God he can stop like one of those sort of gas radiation steam leak things with a mattress and... I don't know, like a Mars bar or something. But when he's not doing that, he can come to your home, he can come to your business, and Squires Electric can actually make sure that if you are building it's a brand new structure from the ground up, or whether you are remodeling an old structure, whether your business has moved into a place occupied by a different kind of business, so you need, you're going to be having a different kind of load on the electrical grid, or you're going to be, you need more broadband access, they can make sure it's all wired correctly. And then it's not going to be like that stereo you had in your car in 12th grade, where it's just like the multicolored plastic spaghetti hanging out from underneath the dashboard, and it just looks like some freak put it together. You don't want that. The place is going to, it's going to look just as good as it did before they got there, and they're going to follow up to make sure that everything's working and it was done properly. Plus, they are listeners to the show, supporters to the show, so you can feel good about that. 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. Do we have did we figure it out?
Scotland has a population of 5,194,000.
So where's Australia, do you think? I mean, in terms of population. I mean, in other words, if Australia were saying it's 50 people, we have to figure out if it's the same number of people for Scotland, because there's only like three people on some island. If it's the Confederated States of Micronesia, let's say, and there's only nine guys there, or Tonga or someplace, that's easier to do.
Australia has like 21 million people.
Okay, so this was five?
Yeah, 22 million people.
So it would
and this
be,
has 5 million.
So it'd be like 12 people, basically. Do we really want to say that we'll go to Scotland if we get 12 subscribers?
No.
Because then what we're basically saying is that it would cost them $84 to buy... to buy our trip there.
Yeah, see, that's, yeah.
That doesn't really work.
That doesn't really work. Well, we do have, it is a density, because Scotland is about 30,000 square miles. So it has a density of 170 people per square mile. So I say, if we got 170 people, if we could fill up an entire square mile of Scotland with Emerson listeners, we will go to Scotland.
Okay, awesome. I was trying to think of like do you say Scots or Scotch to describe as an adjective?
Scots.
Scots. Why do we say scotch? Is that just like an anglicization, or you know what I mean? Like a does that become phoneticized? Like
I'm
a sort
sure
of mangling of the word?
I think so. I'm not sure because I know that
like a scotch egg or something.
Yeah, see, I don't know where scotch egg comes from.
I wonder if scotch was just mispronounced.
Maybe. And there's scotch the beverage.
Hmm.
And there's butterscotch and hopscotch.
Scotch tape.
Mm-hmm. I got nothing else.
See, I win. That's the great thing about that game. It doesn't matter how many came first. I got the last one.
Right.
Well, I was going to try to play a prominent Scots artist. All I can think of is the Bay City Rollers, though, and I don't think that they don't really want to be represented, especially because like half that band is in prison, I think.
Billy Connolly.
That's true. If only I had something from him.
Sean Connery.
Really? Do we have him performing? You know, not here, though. Oh, at home, my Golden Throats collection. Too late do I realize I didn't bring it with me.
Patrick has a album of Sean Connery reading Peter and the Wolf.
That's fantastic. That's not the same recording that has Weird Al Yankovic on it.
I don't think so.
Because he did a Peter and the Wolf thing. Well, because otherwise I'm reduced to playing that AC/DC song that has bagpipes. Hey, by the way, here's the thing about AC/DC. You know, so Angus Young, Malcolm Young, Bon Scott, everybody says AC/DC, an Australian band.
Mm-hmm.
True enough. But you know, the three of those guys, born in Scotland. Born in Scotland, then moved to Australia. So technically, they are Scottish performers.
Jerry Rafferty was Scottish.
So was Lonnie Donegan, I think. I'm not going to play Rock Island Line, though, just in case anybody... What were we doing here? Were we in the middle of a story?
Well, you were doing Squires Electric, and we were talking about how we have a listener in Scotland, and that all kind of got mashed up together somehow.
How did we get onto the international? How did we get onto the listener in Scotland?
You just decided that it was time to
talk about how
it was
an offshoot of something. I said
we had the new country.
No, that was an offshoot of something. Speaking of being international,
well,
we have a new listener.
I think that came from the Squires Electric ad.
No. I started that because, remember, Squires Electric came while you were looking up the population of Australia. And that started because we were talking about Scotland. Was this something to do with electronics?
Maybe.
Broadcasting online? The internet?
I don't know.
The early days of this this program?
The wires of the stereo underneath the...
That was something from inside this whole... We were talking about something that led into...
The Cocteau Twins were Scottish.
Juggalos. No?
Sheena Easton. Also Scottish.
The Stream? We're talking about The Stream?
Maybe.
I have nothing. We should take a break.
Jesus and Mary Chain.
You know, I've been needing to use the bathroom for like an hour and a half, too. Jesus and Mary Chain, really?
Yeah.
Or the J and M Chain, as I was required to refer to them on the radio.
Oh, Annie Lennox. Scottish.
All right. Well, the moment has passed. I'm just going to play the same crap I was going to play. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Still to come, we got your Hick Watch, Clown Watch coming up. We'll also give, when we come back, we should do this. When we come back, let's give the first clue in Name That Snack.
Okay.
And so again, the don't email now because there'd be no point. But the email address is snack.
I mean, you can guess now if you want, but you haven't gotten a clue yet.
Yeah, I mean, really, in a way, it would be kind of impressive if you actually got the snack correct now. Because, I mean, there's no earthly reason why you should know it. So, you know, I mean, I guess bully for you if you're able to do it. when we come back, we will actually give the first clue to identify the snack food of which we are thinking. And again, we'll give one clue every day, kind of narrowing it down. And then the first person to correctly identify the snack of which we are thinking. And you got to do it, by name. That's what you can't do. Is it a sort of pasty-like kind of a thing that's also got some pink and that's with the, you know, it's going to be at our discretion and you can't be a jackass about it. I mean, you can, but we'll just disregard that. So the first person to correctly identify that snack food at the snack at rickemerson.com will win a big basket of vending machine style food stuffs from EH Vending. You can find out more about them at ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. So that is all on the way. Plus, we'll try to get to today's top five, although really, honestly, at this rate, it's going to take us like 12 hours to do the show. The top five once inescapable songs about which you may have entirely forgotten. So all of that stuff is on the way. You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Here's the thing about that. So just now, a little behind-the-curtain talk. You know, you dance a lot over there in your chair. People don't really know that about you. And the songs, like this is very, you know, like this is obviously something that has a certain bounce to it. But like even to like the Dream Theater song, which doesn't really strike most people as like a swinging sort of dance groove, you're over there gyrating like a mad woman.
I get, you know.
It's sort of great.
It's the beginning of the show. The music's starting. It's kind of exciting because having been on the other side of the radio.
You're in the painting.
Well, it's very, yeah, because it's really very evocative and it's really kind of exciting. You know, it's a great opening piece of music. And it's like there's a bit of a mystique to it, the whole thing. Ooh, Rick Emerson's show starting. I hear the Dream Theater song. Woo. And then now, like, I'm here. And we're like, okay, we're going to do this, putting the pages together, blah, blah, blah. Did I get my Vizo? Oh, get my headphones. You know, don't trip over the cord. Ah, I spilled something on myself. And then the music starts, and it's kind of like, ooh, the show's starting. And it's just very exciting.
It is a great, you know, I really, I have to tell you this, that I was just going to say that it's sort of awesome, actually, because, and I probably do it, too. I probably gyrate and, you know, whatever, convulse or something. Something that sort of looks like dancing, if you're me. But I was going to say it's actually sort of, yeah, I wasn't snarking. It's sort of... It's sort of awesome. You have an unrestrained enthusiasm. The Dream Theater song really is good, though. That's a really there was this, you know, there's this like 18-month period, like right in the middle of this show's history where I didn't use it. And it was just a terrible mistake. One of the worst mistakes ever, like in my life, was ditching that song for about a year and a half. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. And this is all true. Join us tomorrow when so you're going to be gone tomorrow. We should mention this.
Mr.
Eric Snyder will be in your stead, correct?
Yes.
Also, we'll be hearing from Kelly Clark at Willamette Week. So tomorrow, Mr. Eric D. Snyder in for Legion of News and the Rick Emerson Show. Also, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week joining us. Thursday, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Friday, Big Jim Willig will be here with, I believe, his first installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 for the new year. And he told us who it was going to be, and I've now forgotten. I am a big failure. Last week was George Carlin. It wasn't Foster Brooks.
It was Foster Brooks.
But it seems like it was somebody else from a different era.
Oh, God, I can't remember either.
Yeah, I got another.
It was somebody good. It was somebody I like.
Well, it's going to be, so anyways, that is going to be a surprise to all of us. So that's coming up this Friday, ladies and gentlefolk. All right, let's see. So without further ado, now we mentioned this. We mentioned this just on the other side of the break that the email address for Name That Snack guesses is snack at rickemerson.com. I almost said Rick at snackemerson.com, which. And then it's like I have to go buy the domain name to make sure that it doesn't become like a clown porn site.
And then there's Rick Pig Snack Baby.
Yes. Yes, there is. Thank you. somebody asked me to clarify this. The address for guesses is snack. That is singular. There's no S at the end of that. There's snack at rickemerson.com. Snack at rickemerson.com. That is where you do your guessing.
So and you get one guess a day. And if you guess multiple times, we're just going to take your first one. That's it.
Yeah, it's because if, you know, and this is, you know, and but we should say also that that typically this sort of thing is not a problem. You know, it's people, the level of, you know, jackassery that happens is very, very, I mean, it's minimal. And it's almost always accidental. It is accidental jackassery, which is a problem, like, in my own life. So, in any event, Name That Snack, brought to you by E.H. Vending. You can find out more about them by going to ehvending.com or calling 360-816-1853. That is 360-816-1853. 53. You can talk to James or Joshua, the guys who operate that fine business. So if you are a manager, you're the decision maker, you're the shock caller at your business, you're going to be, and I didn't say shock caller, shock caller.
I thought you did.
Or, you know, look, if you're sort of a managerial shock caller, and maybe the... you know, maybe the shock you're administering is a lack of beef jerky. You know, who's to say? If you are a decision maker at your place of business, or maybe you just maybe you're having some sort of illicit relations with the decision maker, and so you are a de facto a decision maker in the building. You can contact EH Vending to have your vending solutions brought right in, to have the problem taken care of. So if you're dealing with a vendor right now, somebody providing vending machines, and you want to switch, or you feel like you're charging, you're being charged too much, or you're starting the business from scratch and you're finding it difficult to get that set up, or maybe the recession is such that you have to cut back a little bit and you find that they don't want to deal with a smaller business, or they don't want to deal with a cost reduction on your end, you want to contact EH Vending because they can find something that works for you. You can contact them at 360-816-1853 or go to ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. See if they'll... hey, how do you feel about that? Let me ask you this. I was just going to give a piece of advice regarding Hostess Snowballs, but it occurred to me that I don't really know how you feel about Hostess Snowballs.
I have a rather sick love of the Hostess Snowballs. I know many people do not like them, and I really, really like them. Because, well, you and I are of an agreement. We both love coconut.
Yes.
And I love things that have really interesting multiple texture kind of a things. So I really like the fact you got kind of the... almost stale, kind of crunchy coconut on the outside. Then that weird, gooey marshmallow,
right,
like polyester marshmallow stuff.
It is like styrofoam almost, isn't
and
it?
And then inside, cake.
It's and like, then it's whipped like, cream and inside cream. That.
So there are many, many things.
And it's pink most of the time.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about the Hostess Snowball.
Like,
I think that if I tried it now, I would probably vomit. On the other hand...
I haven't had one in years.
That's the thing, is I had them when I was a kid. By the way, one of the... And this list seems to just be endless. One of the many things that made my father suspect that I was a homosexual.
Oh, and by the way, the Hostess Snowball... not the snack of the week for Name That Snack.
No, it's not.
So don't guess that.
Now, if you're guessing that, that's a road to nowhere. No, my father was horrified that I wanted like a pink sort of fluttery kind of, because it had, and the coconut was sort of shaved.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was almost like coconut glitter, or, like coconut, it was like a, what is the word I'm looking for? Like a, not chiffon, but almost like a...
confetti.
It was almost like, it was like coconut confetti. And so I wanted this pink, like girly snack. And he kept trying to get me to have something less gay, like putting a Twinkie in my mouth. That was always his suggestion. I just now put all that together in my head. Oh, there's so many things falling into place now. But, so if I had one now, I don't think I would like it because, when you're a kid, your palate is just so... it's either more or less sensitive. I don't know which. When you're a kid, nothing is ever sugary enough, first of all.
Yeah.
Like, you could just have, what's this? Well, it's sugar cubes with honey on top. Mmm. And chocolate milk. It's like when I saw the marshmallow Fruit Loop cereal, which is a thing that they only sell to, under 6-year-olds and, junkies.
Yeah.
Because who else would,
Yeah.
I'm just saying. But the thing about the snowball that's so great is that it's just bizarre. Like, it's some weird alien. I think as a kid, I loved the Hostess Snowball snack because it seemed like a misfit snack. It seemed like a duck-billed platypus.
There's also the thing when you're a kid, too. I think you like snack foods and candies that seems like you're getting a lot for your money.
Yes.
Like, if you went and you bought, a popsicle kind of an item, there are always those really big, long ones, like the Rocket Pops or whatever. And it seemed like they cost just about the same amount of money as the other popsicles, but they were huge.
Right.
So they were, extra specially good. And I think with the snowball, it's the same thing, because they just seemed really big.
And
in your tiny child hands.
And they didn't resemble anything like in nature. Like, they didn't seem like your mom could make cupcakes, or you could get like a sort of sponge cake, like your mom would make like layer cake, or even like my mom would make like cornbread, which sort of looks like a Twinkie. Snowball doesn't look like anything else on earth. So that's what makes it so great. And we've completely talked toward the end of the music. So we will let you give the first clue here.
All right.
So the first clue in what, Dawn?
Name That Snack.
Sorry, I keep forgetting to change the reverb. So this clue is going to be big and broad, and we're going to narrow this on subsequent days. So every weekday, some of you old school listeners who remember the mystery sound know that if it takes 5 months, we'll do it for 5 months. It doesn't matter. You missed the you were not around for the mystery sound, and you are.
No, but I was married to a listener during the mystery sound, and so I got to hear secondhand every single day.
The worst bit ever. The worst bit in the history of everything. So we are going to start today with a big, broad clue. Don't forget, if you can somehow suss out the item about which we are speaking, you win yourself a gift basket full of tasty consumables from some of the vending machines stocked by EH Vending and supplied by EH Vending at ehvending.com. Don Taylor, whenever you're ready.
Our first clue about our first snack food is, it is manufactured by Nabisco.
I'm going to try.
I don't think the echo works for that.
Hold on. How about
it just sounds like I'm in a sewer.
Hold on a second. How about the?
There's gators down here.
Oh. All right, try that.
The snack is manufactured by Nabisco.
All right, one second. I'm going to give it. Hold on. Just like, I'm going to try one more here. Hold on. All right.
The snack is manufactured by Nabisco.
What do you think?
I don't think we really need this for the clue. I think it's good for name that snack, but I'm not sure for the clue. I don't think we need it for the clue. Ooh, I like that. Sounds like I've been breathing helium.
All right, now say this. Try to talk like a British mouse and say, your brain, we want to buy it off you.
Oh, brain, we want to buy it off you.
Oh, that's the best thing I've ever heard. Okay, I have to turn this off, because otherwise I'm just going to spend the rest of the day putting you through various flangers and gates. All right, so the first clue in Name That Snack is manufactured by Nabisco.
Yes.
All right, there you go. That is clue the first, manufactured by Nabisco. And again, we'll do narrowing clues. We will give you clarifying clues every subsequent weekday right here on the Rick Emerson Show. This is brought to you by EH Vending. .com. That is ehvending.com also. All right.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
That took us like an hour.
I know.
Right, just there in that bit to get to manufactured by Nabisco.
Oh, let's do our clown watch.
Awesome. Here is your clown watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Here's Don Taylor with your Clown Watch.
King County, Washington prosecutors have charged Shane Willis, 19, with shooting two other youths on a popular walking trail. He has been charged with first-degree assault. excuse me. Police claim Willis was dressed as a juggalo, a gang associated with the Insane Clown Posse band, when he fired on the other teens. Currently housed in a jail psychiatric unit, Willis stands accused of shooting a young man and young woman during a bizarre altercation that started with an argument over gang affiliation. Senior Deputy Prosecutor Jim A. Farrell told the court, "This was an incredibly serious and violent exchange that very easily could have resulted in the death of at least one of the victims, who required life-saving surgery immediately after the shooting." Apparently, Willis was walking on the trail when he encountered the two victims. Neither knew Willis or recalled meeting him before that afternoon. A young man walking with Willis was wearing a blue bandana, prompting the male victim to ask whether he was claiming to belong to a Crip gang. Willis's friend said he was not, which led to a heated argument with the man, who was eventually shot. In writing the court, the prosecutor said Willis then drew a pistol. As the verbal exchange continued, he told the man he had until the count of three to leave. Once he had counted to three, he fired. The .40-caliber bullet struck the man in the neck, then continued and struck the young woman in the ear. The man was rushed to the hospital. Willis and his companion fled, but were arrested shortly after the incident. Speaking with investigators, Willis, again, dressed as a juggalo.
Now, as of this morning, before we were like, this is the best thing. So I walk into the studio this morning. This morning, there are times when I walk in here and I sort of have an idea of what kind of conversation I'm going to have, or what the day is going to hold, or what to expect. And then there are days that is not the case. And today fell into the latter camp, because it was just sort of like a weirdness in the air for some reason. And I walk in, and the weirdness was confirmed by Greg immediately asking me if I'd seen the genuine batarangs that somebody had sent, I believe for Aaron Duran. I think a listener, maybe a listener in Utah, had sent, like, as I think Greg described them as being metal, pointy, sharp, and awesome. And they're like regulation size and weight and, you know, the whatever batarangs.
With like a holster.
Yeah, with like a thing you could put, and apparently like a fastening cable of some kind as well. Yeah, and so like you could wear them on your utility belt, which just seems like a thing that is going to, I mean, it is awesome, but that is also going to cause you some trouble. Yeah. Might be the cause of and solution to your trouble, actually, while I'm thinking about it. Also, some cornhole implements, and then it was something else that they received, like another bottle of vodka or whatever. So that's how I was greeted. It was like Greg Nibbler wanting to talk to me about cornhole and batarangs. And then it's like I walked across the threshold into the studio, and you just waved your hands. It's like you fluttered your hands around in frustration like they were hummingbirds feeding on your ears. And you said, I spent 15 minutes looking for this picture of a juggalo. And then, like, without any further elaboration, you just, like, went back to typing.
Mugshot
of a juggalo. And I didn't know where you were looking or why or, like, you know, what the root cause of it all was. But have we found a mugshot yet, or is it just that King County keeps no mugshots online?
King County doesn't seem to keep mugshots online.
Sons of bitches.
I know. So it's interesting, though, because, Willis said he took a gun from his stepfather's garage earlier in the day, and then he left the gun in the woods as he fled the shooting scene. So I was interested because one of the comments after this story was somebody saying, it's funny how they keep referring to juggalos as gangs when they're really just fans of the Insane Clown Posse. So I was talking to you about it, and we were talking about how apparently, no, there really are gangs of juggalos.
Yeah.
There's a story in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer from 2006 talking about a group of thugs in black hooded sweatshirts, at least one in angry clown makeup, it says, were terrorizing visitors in a state park.
Angry on the outside, by the way.
The group cried, woo woo, juggalo, as they assaulted park visitors with machetes and fists.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at the, well, I guess I am kind of laughing at the assaulting part, but more so at the woo woo juggalo, which is just funny. There's just no way to get around that.
They stole cell phones, cash, and wallets, and threatened to cut their victims' heads off with the machete.
Well, otherwise the machete is just a sparkly thing you're carrying around for cosmetic purposes.
While yelling, woo woo juggalo.
You got to at least indicate, that you might be using it.
So apparently,
Well, I mean, a group of guys who all hang out together, wear a uniform, have their own rituals and customs, and engage in thuggery or violence or criminality of some kind. I mean, that is a gang. There's just no getting around that.
They're giving all the peace loving juggalos a bad name.
Yes, and it is one of those things that, like, it's hard not to. Here's the other reason. Here's the thing about juggalos one of the many, many things.
First of all, the word juggalo is just funny. It's really funny.
It's fantastic. And there was a time when I sort of knew where it from, you know, like, I know that's redundant, not from whence. There was a time when I knew whence it derived. And I've sort of spaced on that now. I also like, by the way, that they're juggalettes, and there was on Division and like 42nd up until a couple years ago, there was, and I felt so bad for them because you know that they just got hounded out of business by a bunch of like prank calls and wrong numbers. There was a juggling supply store called Juggle O, and it was Juggle-O. They had two locations, and it seemed to be a thriving, I mean, in as much as there can be a thriving and prosperous goddamn juggling business, I mean, that's how you know that somebody's father left him a trust fund, is that he started a goddamn juggling store.
See, I used to drive by, it might be the same store, I used to drive by this juggling store here, and I just always think, well, it's Portland. I guess Portland can support a juggling store.
And there was actually two of them. That guy owned two different stores. And it was like, well, how many freaking jugglers can a city have? But eventually they went out of business. And you know it's because he just got tired of answering the phone and going, yes, we're called juggle. No, that's a different. I don't know what woo. I don't have machetes. Christ. And just, you know, and then he would closed, you know, and he put up the back in 5 minutes thing and start drinking.
Apparently there is a Insane Clown Posse song called The Juggla. And Joseph Bruce
is that
of the Insane Clown Posse.
T-H-A?
Yeah. J-U-G-G-L-A. The Juggla.
That Juggla?
No, it just says the juggler.
The juggler. Sorry.
And then Joseph Bruce of the Insane Clown Posse, during a live performance in 1994, addressed the audience as juggalos.
In a moment of inspiration.
And the positive response resulted in them using the word therefore to refer to themselves and their friends, family, and fans.
You know, strangely, this is how Joseph Smith began as well. The thing about the juggalos...
sticking his head inside a hat.
That I sort of dig, though, is I do kind of like the fact... I mean, I don't know. This says more about me and, I guess, my adolescence and my, treading water in a sea of retarded juvenile development than anything else. I do kind of like the fact, I guess that's the wrong way to put it. I think I reflexively like or defend or feel some weird fondness for Insane Clown Posse fans, for juggalos. Just because they just get ridiculed by everybody and they don't care. That's the thing.
Oh,
and like
yeah.
they just, you know, and it's and peer pressure is a pretty powerful thing and scorn and derision from, you know, from society. And it's not like juggalos are just made fun of by like the squares. It's not like it's just a thing your dad doesn't understand. I mean, it's like 98% of the world doesn't understand it and makes fun of it, presumably sure. including a lot of people that would be considered popular or, you know, that somebody you would want to emulate or some girl you want to hump or whatever. So the fact that they just, you know. I can't even believe.
Unlike being a goth, in which case you do get made fun of by 98% of the world, but everyone does understand what it is, and then makes fun of you.
Yeah, but I guess that's sort of the thing too. Is that like, I can't even believe that these sentences are leaving my mouth today. So you know, if anybody I made the mistake of looking at my inbox a second ago because I was looking up the making sure that I had the URL correct for EH vending, and I was looking there, and I just from the subject lines alone, it's just like nothing but juggalo centered scorn coming in. So I apologize, you know, whatever the phrase is, you know, for everything that I'm about to say, if it just chafes on your ears, but you know, in a strange way, juggalos are sort of like Hell's Angels, really, because. Because, you know, the Hell's Angels have that sort of thing, too, where it's like, you know, I don't know. It's this like they're sort of lovable because they're just like so relentlessly vile and just sort of like cheerfully and good naturedly, except when they're stomping people or raping.
Yeah.
You know, but they're just sort of like they have this like life loving sort of like horrible zeal for everything wrong and bad. But like. But in their own sort of twisted, like, honor code kind of sticking, you know, watching each other's back against this crazy world full of, you know, they're the ones who are the misfits and we're the ones who are the whatever. And it's like, and the juggalos are just sort of, they are a variation on that theme. And they're also sort of like goths who, like, you have to be careful if you laugh at them because they'll beat your ass, apparently, and cut your head off with a machete.
Yeah.
So, I mean... That maybe is so. In that way, there may be a sort of an advance. They're an evolution of the goth subset. Because if you know, what is some goth guy going to do? I mean, is it really just you know, just sort of go home and you know, just you know, sit and like weep, clutching a Johnny Marr poster or something? You know, I get the feeling that if you laugh at you know juggalos, half the time it's going to be nothing. The other half of the time, they're going to set fire to your house. And I mean, that's sort of awesome. That you know. That, like, you know, everybody sort of laughs at them, but then every now and again they just randomly kill somebody who does. I mean, I can sort of get with that. Rick Emerson supports that I can't be prosecuted for anything they do after hearing the show kind of way.
And as I've mentioned, when I lived in North Portland, I lived about a block from a house that was rented by a bunch of kids. And I don't know if they were going to University of Portland, which seems kind of unlikely because I saw a lot – because you know, University of Portland
– Juggalo goes to college.
Private Catholic school. There was a lot of heavy drinking in the off-campus housing, but it was also like, you know, rugby and soccer players and really clean-cut looking kids who you could tell were just starting to like drink for the first time.
Right.
They'd move in. Honest to God, we'd have a house full of girls usually living next door, and they'd move in and they'd be like, "Hi, I'm Sherry and this is Janet. And we're moving in." And they'd be, you know, putting in flowers. And then like a month or so later, I'd see one of them smoking a cigarette on the front porch. And by like 6 months in, we're coming home on Friday night and they're all on the front porch doing beer bongs. You know, it's like it didn't take long for them to just become completely corrupted by off-campus housing. So I don't think the Juggalos were part of the college group.
They go to Juggle U.
But we'd come home every once in a while, like on a weekend or something, and there'd be like, they'd be having a party or something, and there'd be just like all these Juggalos like on the sidewalk and on the front porch just hanging out. And Patrick and I would just be kind of like, oh, look at the Juggalos. They're so cute.
Can we agree on this right now?
Clown makeup.
Comedically, that swapping out the word Juggalo with any word in a sentence, especially if it's something from popular culture, immediately makes it gold, like the Juggalo next door. You know, Juggalo's big day out.
My first Juggalo.
I was bedtime for Juggalo.
Bedtime for Juggalo.
I'm telling you right now. See, there's somebody right now.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Juggalo.
That's fantastic. Oh my God. That's I could do the here's the thing. Somebody right now needs to be doing like a web series if it doesn't already exist. And also, now here's the other thing. You mark my words. This is another thing I'm going to say. This is like they remind me of Hell's Angels or Goths or whatever. Now, do you in any way feel that, do you share any of what I'm talking about here, where you have like a strange, like, from a distance fondness for Juggalos?
Oh, sure. Because for me, it's not so much the goth thing. For me, it's like they remind me of being a punk rock kid.
Right.
And this sort of outside perception of violence and danger and scariness.
And there's like one half of 1% that does that.
You know, and I and it's like, and all the guys I knew, you know, they were just kind of adorable.
Right.
You know, even the ones that were all screwed up in heroin, like Darby Crash, were actually just kind of sweet and kind of adorable.
But every now and again, like some guy in a Germs shirt would stab somebody in the eye and it became the punk menace.
Right. And his issues had nothing to do with being a punk. He just happened to go, you know, that this was a way for him. And I think it's the same way with a lot of the violent Juggalos. It's like they find some way to express themselves that they are using to reflect their own anger and hatred and violence. And it doesn't have anything to do with the bulk of the culture as a rule.
Do you remember that Chips episode that was all about the dangers of punk rock?
Yeah.
And there was the punk contest being held at the club, and there was the band called Pain. And it was like some guy in like a feather boa and sparkly pants or something, because I think that's what somebody who worked on Chips thought the punk was.
And every single time that there's some kind of a trend or a subculture, this happens. I mean, there was an episode of Bones a couple of weeks ago where it was like they went to a steampunk club, and you're watching this and I'm just going, this place does not exist anywhere in reality.
Right. Well, it's like even House. I was watching House last night, and I mean, the ones on House aren't as egregious, but, you know, here's why they're not. Here's why they don't seem so egregious, because right now I'm watching House Season 6, which is just last year. Now, if I go back and watch some of these things 5 years from now, it's going to seem way more embarrassing, because on the God damn, there was like three in a row. There was the two I remember were the last night. It was like some guys at a Ren Faire. And they were like all of like the really forced expository conversations about, you know, they were like Foreman and Chase are talking about, you know.
Oh, God,
like,
I remember that when it was ridiculous.
What do you mean? He acts like a king all the time. Crikey, you know, or whatever, you know, and it was just retarded.
Because people do that.
Well, and also apparently because people live in some bubble where Ren Faires have never been discussed.
This was one of those magical Ren Faires that they have on TV where I guess people just live there.
It goes year round.
It goes all year round and people live there. They don't actually have jobs.
No.
Or go home to like Canoga Park in their car.
And also everybody on House's team, they all live in some alternate reality where they've never watched a television show or a movie where Ren Faires were discussed.
Right.
Sort of like how people in Walking Dead have never seen a zombie movie. So there was that, and then goddamn though, there was one that I watched last week, which would have still made it season 6, where there was this whole like, it wasn't even like an ethical dilemma. It was just clearly one of those ideas they had on an index card in the writing room. And they went, oh, I guess we're down to that. Is there anything else? No, that's the bottom of the pile, Ted. Well, crap. Let's write it into an episode. And it was all about the quandaries and perplexities posed by a woman who blogged her entire life online.
which seemed fresh, like in like 1997 or so, where it was, she's like, you know, they're getting ready to like, I don't know, to give her like a rectal exam or something. She's like, hold on a second, let me just finish my HTML, you know, and she's getting ready to post something on her blog, which is short for weblog, Dawn.
Oh.
Some bloggers apparently write about any number of personal things that happen to themselves to the consternation of their friends and loved ones and doctors. It was sort of like that horror, and I love the show Homicide, I really do, as a sort of, in retrospect, sort of clunky, you know, compared to The Wire anyway, precursor to Wire, way better than anything that was on network TV at that time in terms of, you know, cop shows or whatever. But I mean, in its later seasons, got very creaky, especially when they would do episodes with titles like Homicide.com, where it was all like some serial killer who's, what do you mean? He's streaming this killing live to the internet and there's no way we can track him down? That's right. The technology doesn't exist. He could be anywhere. And it was, you know, like with this like, and in 1989, with this like amazing full screen, full motion video that was flawless and, you know, from a warehouse somewhere in Baltimore.
I like the shows. There was one episode of CSI where, was it CSI? Or NCIS, it might have been one of those shows where they had to like go into Second Life to find like the guy who killed the other person. And it was just, and it was really ridiculous. And it wasn't even one of those things where it was like, it's called My Alternate Life. It's a new, no.
They just called it Second Life
because they had obviously gotten permission from Second Life to, because the people at Second Life were like, this would be awesome, an awesome promotion for us. And so, yeah, the one of these though that was really good that I really, really liked, the episode on CSI where they went to the furry convention was awesome.
Was it really good?
It was really, really good.
Did it seem like somebody had just like read a piece in Wired and then wrote about the furry thing, or did it seem like they had a furry consultant?
I think they had a furry consultant because they actually did a very good job of explaining what like scritching was and being in a fur pile. And
wait
then,
a minute.
And them having to actually use the blue stuff to find DNA samples like on the furry costumes because they'd been rubbing up against each other.
Let's back up for a second
doing
here.
Stuff.
Scritching.
Yeah.
Is that a furry only word?
I don't think it's a furry only word.
Because I use that word, you know.
Well, most people do to refer to like scratching their dog's
heads.
Yeah,
okay.
Like,
I wanted to make sure I wasn't inadvertently using some sort of.
No,
I mean,
but the furries, scritching is a thing where they like, you know.
It's all humping, I would imagine.
It's kind of humpy.
All right.
Yeah.
It's like how they have.
Although
like,
I think there's another whole phrase for the whole humpy pile of furries rubbing up against each other thing, which I can't remember.
Is this like
how
Eskimos are like 1,000 words for snow?
Yeah,
like furries, you just got 100 words for having
sex.
But
I gotta say, the furry one was really good, and they really found some clever ways to figure out like forensically how they were gonna.
Which CSI was this?
This was William Peterson CSI. So William Peterson as Grissom at the furry convention, because he's very open-minded about pretty much everything.
Sure.
You know, so he's kind of like, he's just kind of like looking around and saying, don't be judgmental. These people are just, you know, doing this thing.
I got to say that as tacky as these shows sometimes are and as corny as they can occasionally be, they are all the descendants of The X-Files, though, because The X-Files was the first show, and they were hit or miss, but The X-Files was the first show that I can think of that really tried to depict cultural norms or behaviors or subsets in something approaching a realistic way in more or less real time, like not 15 years later.
Yeah.
Like they would like, it was always like Mulder talking about like some, you know, well, they call it slash lit or whatever, you know, and it would just be something some phenomenon that was then new online that he'd be talking about.
The worst is the Law and Order shows, particularly SVU, where they literally, and you can just watch it happen, they literally just have rooms full of people who are scouring newspapers to like take stories and then just sort of rewrite names and turn it into something and try and turn it in, and just find some way for them to be outraged by something, you know, like the one I played the sound clips from, because and this week they discover that soda causes childhood obesity and they have to talk about it at length.
And where you've got the ridiculous scenario of iced tea talking about aspartame for 12 minutes.
Yeah.
All right. I don't even know what the hell we were talking about. Oh, juggalos. So, okay. So here's the thing. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I am kind of like you in that, you know, because like, you know, it's weird to talk about homicide. So here's, we can tie this all together now with a neat homicide shaped bow. There was an episode of Homicide that aired like, and you know, isn't it so much worse when a great or very good show has one of those episodes that is just cringe-inducingly bad, or they just, Or they're just like, it's so cornily handled, and it's like you just like go, oh, I expected so much better from you, Homicide.
Speaking of which, by the way, I was going to mention this, the episode of House, the Renaissance Fair.
Yeah.
They actually shot that at the Renaissance Fair I used to work at, and there were a number of people I actually know who were extras.
Really?
Because they actually went and shot it while the fair was going on, so they didn't have to, like, pay for the setup costs. Yeah. They just paid the
production
fair a fee. And
done.
They said, who wants to be an extra?
Me!
And yeah. And they,
I wouldst.
And people showed up in their costumes that they already owned.
Of course.
And so, yeah.
I don't even know. Oh, yeah. So there was an episode of Homicide, like, in the fourth season or something. And I really do like Homicide a lot. And it was an episode with Eric Morse as guest star, who was on St. Elsewhere. And he's, you know, he's one of my favorite. He's kind of
David
a character
Morse?
Director now.
Tall, curly-haired.
Now I don't
playing
know.
Playing bad guys now, mostly.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. And he was in The Negotiator.
Yeah, David Morse.
David Morse. Yeah. I don't know who the hell Eric Morse even is.
I don't know.
That's weird. That just fell into my brain. Maybe I was thinking of Eric Norse.
Maybe.
Doesn't matter.
Or Eric Norseman
or
of
Eric...
True Blood.
So David Morse is on there, and he plays a heavy, as he sometimes does now, which is sort of strange. But he's there. And it's like one of those things where he's Bayless's cousin, and he Bayless is trying to, like, get him out of trouble because he shot a guy who appeared on his front porch one night. It's so retarded. It's like he opens the door and there's like some kid speaking gibberish, seemed like he was on the drugs. David Morse feels threatened, gets the family gun, shoots the guy who turns out to be a kid, you know, teenager. He's dead. And then it's a whole lot of like family versus career. And, you know, does Bayless, you know, cover for his cousin or whatever? And it turns out that the guy, the kid he kills, he's like 17 and an exchange student. He's from Hungary, which is why it sounds like he was speaking gibberish because he's speaking Hungarian. And then the reason he looked so crazy is because he was dressed up like Gene Simmons. Keep in mind, this episode is set like in 1992.
Okay.
He was dressed up as Gene Simmons because he's going to one of those kiss parties the kids have now.
Is that really popular?
I saw it as a rerun again about a year ago, and I just sat, and it's like I could just I just felt like I was covered with aphids. I was squirming so, and it's like, with a show like that, you figure there'd be somebody in there, like Belzer, with somebody just would go, no, it's terrible. You can't write that. Just why don't they just? It's like when they have the. It's like when you hear that, like the profanity that was clearly supposed to be something else, and you wonder why they went with the corny substitution. You know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, why they just don't say, like, instead of saying, like, forget you when they want to say the F word, why don't they just say, like, go to hell or something?
Yeah.
Because at least that's a thing you would really say. So it's like, you know, well, he was going to some sort of a party. And then they cut to, like, his friend, you know, being interrogated. He was going to a kiss party. Lots of kids do it, you know. you know, because that's what 17-year-olds were doing in 1992, going to kiss parties everywhere in the suburbs.
He was dressing up as Wham. We all do it.
So freaking stupid. Anyway, so final thought on the Juggalos for now is that, so all of this sounds,
final thought on the Juggalos.
Here's my final thought for this moment on the Juggalos. So, yeah. Anyway, blah blah blah. And they are in that way. They are similar to punk or to Kiss or whatever. And I know that outrages like punk purists and, you know, and rock purists and stuff. They hear that, but it's just there is no future. There is only recycled past, and so we are recycling our own Kiss punk past into Juggalos now. And
yeah, my mom told me stories about like the Zoot Suiters beating up on on the swing kids, you know, in the 40s in L.A. when they would go.
Teddy boys with your drain-pipe trousers.
Yeah.
So you mark my words, though, that somebody within the next 5 years will do an in-depth, serious, if entertaining, documentary about the phenomenon of the Juggalos and where they came from and the rise of the Juggalos, proving again that the rule works. But somebody will talk about the rise of that phenomenon, and they will compare it and contrast. They'll do. Somebody will make like a Michael Moore style documentary in the next 5 years, doing exactly what we did here today, comparing and contrasting them to previous sort of trends and fashion and the intersection of the two in terms of youth subculture, the way that they are negatively portrayed in the media, sort of a seduction of the innocent kind of a thing, and then interviewing Juggalos and then you know what they'll do too is they'll find like the one smart Juggalo in town who's like, you know, You know, what you might not know is he's also an honor student and plays the piccolo. And they'll cut to him, like, filling out college applications.
And the juggalo, in full juggalo makeup, wearing his fedora and his big coat, walking down the street with all the kids from the local orphanage that he takes out to play basketball every weekend.
And then they will end with some sort of, like, a juggalo wedding, you know, where there's, like, the littlest juggalo, you know, as, like, the ring bearer. I'm telling you right now, this is one of those things where I can see it coming, that this will be a documentary, and it'll be really well regarded. And you know what?
It's gotta happen, though. We have to wait a long enough time, though, that we can see, like, juggalos in, like, their 40s who are still doing the juggalo thing, and they have, like, juggalo kids.
That'll be a sequel, and it'll be, like, Juggalo for Life or something. Telling you right now, see, I have few gifts, but one of them is hackery.
It would be awesome if somebody was a juggalo and they had a juggalo real doll.
Okay.
But they painted her up as a juggalette.
I'm trying to think if I want to follow up on that. Wait. No, I don't. Are we still in the... Have we even ended the clown watch?
No, this is still the
This has been
watch.
Like a 30-minute clown watch.
Yeah.
Jesus. All right. Well, so there's no mugshot of the guy.
No.
Now, I wonder if it would be pointless.
And I look, too. I spent a lot of time looking.
So do you know, I wonder if this varies from state to state. If they bust the guy and he's wearing his juggle garb, do they hose that off of him before they take the mugshot?
I don't know.
Or do they, I wonder if they, you know, because you figure that would obliterate his distinguishing features. It would render the mugshot pointless unless the mugshot is not for ID as such. In other words, if it's just for record.
Except it is, though. I think that it's for ID, because then...
Have you seen this man?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Although, wait, I think...
By the way, truer statements than this are rarely made. This is me talking about how I have a special fondness for the juggalos. And then someone says, "You say that until a juggalo steals your wife in a burlap sack. Then how fondly will you look at them?" All right. Well, that's a fair point. Touche, sir. I have no rejoinder there.
Do they do that?
You know, I don't know. I think he might be thinking of people from Kazakhstan. So is there any sort of have we found any answer on the Washington mugshot front?
No, there's no mugshot of this guy, and I'm not even finding any good juggalo just mugshots.
Are you Googling the phrase juggalo mugshot?
Yes, I am.
Juggalo mugshot. See, doesn't it right there? Doesn't that just sound like it could be the name of like a? It could be the name of a concept album,
yeah.
You know, or maybe like a sort of a like a musical collective, like the Kelly Family.
Mm.
Okay.
I think they make you take your makeup off before they take the mugshot. So,
is there a? You know, what we should do. You know, there's a niche dollar here that we could be getting. We should be doing like a Juggalo radio sort of a thing, like on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, this guy's going to pay us if we just do one show.
That's true. Wait, hold on. Let's see if he. But the last thing he's typed was "what a douche." So I that could be, you know,
so maybe not.
That could be in reference to any number to dozens and dozens of people. I mean, just really from today. So, all right. Well, we should close that out.
Probably.
So we'll just close our.
Yeah.
We should have a juggle watch or a juggalo.
I mentioned that earlier.
Yeah. No. I
you
think
scoffed.
That, no. I. But you know. But that's because we have the stories very rarely. But it seems like what we lack in quantity, we make up. You know, that's an inch wide but a mile deep there.
Yeah.
Because that one story has. I mean, that's been a good as they say in radio, 3/4 of an hour.
Yeah.
Right there. All right. Well, there's your clown watch for. You know what we should do. What do you think about this? No fooling. Not as a zany radio observation. You know, just a thing I say and then we forget about it. What would you think about this? What would you think about... This does sound funny. Because, again, we got to come up with a rule for that. I'm going to call it... So the thing of always carrying a knife, it turns out that's rule number 9. The thing about if it exists, there's porn for it, that's rule 34. We should have a rule about if you swap the word juggalo out with any word in a sentence, it becomes funny. It's like rule 72. We're going to call that rule 72.
Probably with any noun. It wouldn't work, you know, grammatically. If you, you know, swapped a juggalo for, say, an adverb.
No, because then, yeah. No, because then you have to, because then you're using it. Yeah, you'd have to say juggalo, and that doesn't
right.
work. No. All right. So swapping juggalo out for any noun in a sentence increases that sentence's the comedy return by, I would say, 150%.
Yes.
All right. So... What was I just saying? So as a thing we should... What would you think about this? About doing later this week, early next week? Seriously, no fooling? Ask a juggalo. We'll get Chris in here, and we'll just have him give us just the you know, from top to bottom, the ups and downs of the Juggalo experience, how he became exposed to them, what is his, you know, how it manifests itself in his daily, how often he's donning his Juggalo apparel.
And you know, if that one listener signs up for a full year, we'll just make it the whole show.
Yeah, and then
the Juggalo episode.
And then if we decide at some point that we really want to want to saturate that niche, you know, with Juggalo radio, which is I seem to be incapable of not saying it that way. He'll be our in to that world, to that community.
And if you have, you know, just advice you want from an actual Juggalo on anything, he'll be here to answer those questions.
That's okay. See that right there. See, I went, as we so often do in the show, it's an alley and then the oop, because I had the Ask a Juggalo. Funny, sure, but I mean, entry level, serviceable. It's it's amusing, but a little pedestrian. And then you had the Juggalo's Guide to Life, right, sort of an approach, you know, or like
relationship advice,
from
recipes
a Juggalo.
From a Juggalo.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. All right. And the thing is, here's why that bit is great, just, you know, from a radio mechanics kind of sense. The reason that bit works is because whether his advice is good or bad, it doesn't matter. Like, if his advice is terrible, hilarious. If his advice is good, it's usable, and then it becomes juxtapositionally funny.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Awesome. Would it be just relationship advice, or could it be like how to make a flan?
It could be anything. Just you want advice on something, you know.
Ask a Juggalo.
Ask a Juggalo.
Okay. I'm calling dibs on that right now. The Ask a Juggalo feature. Fantastic. I don't even know what we're doing at this point. So that was your clown watch.
I'm just looking up John F. Kennedy quotes to put, like, you know, the word Juggalo in randomly. So ask not what your Juggalo can do for you. Ask what you can do for your Juggalo.
Right now, not that I'm encouraging people to abuse themselves with drugs, but if you were planning on getting stoned, right now is the time to do that. If you were maybe going to be loading up like a little whatever for your afternoon relaxation, this would be the moment to do it, because this will be the funniest thing you've heard all day. Really, this is going to be the comedic high point of your week. If you're going to be getting baked out of your brain, hearing Don just put the word Juggalo. Seriously, if you were stoned, if you're like just sitting in your apartment with some dude, you know, and you've both just hit the bong, you could sit and do that for like 3 hours. It would never get old. Do one more.
Let's see.
Should Google maybe historical quotes.
Yeah. Let's see, Thomas Jefferson. Let's get a quote from Thomas Jefferson. A Juggalo is much more exposed to quarrels than a man of spirit.
It's fantastic.
All tyranny needs to gain a Juggalo is for people of good conscience to remain silent.
Excellent. Our absolute final thought for this moment, at least, about Juggalos is that somebody wants us to know that he is going to create a new sex act and call it the Juggalo mugshot. And the worst thing about that is I immediately pictured a sex act.
It's less the actual act as your reaction to it.
I gave that chick a Juggalo mugshot.
Or I did her so well, she did the Juggalo mugshot. It's like the face you make when someone does something specific to you.
It's like the look after the donkey punch.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
Cheryl wants it known that Juggalo has become the new iPhone for Rick and Dawn, apparently. I wonder if there's got to be a Juggalo iPhone app.
I'll bet there is.
I wonder what it does. Okay, we can't look it up now. No, we have to stop. We have to wait, or otherwise it's going to take us down some hole.
Yeah, that's true.
Whole
okay.
blind yet grease painted alley. Okay, we have to be done now. Okay, awesome, excellent. I don't even know what we're doing.
We got more stories. I got a couple more.
Do we have more stories?
I have more.
Does
news.
Mama got her stories?
I got Mama's got her stories.
All right. We still have a hick watch to get
yes,
to.
Yes, we do.
All right. Well, let's just do that.
I got to tell you about the guy who was beaten with the frozen meat.
Okay.
A Canadian woman faces charges of allegedly beating up a man with a package of frozen ground beef in Newfoundland.
Excellent.
Officers were called to a domestic dispute in Paradise, Newfoundland, east of the provincial capital of St. John's, on Saturday night. Inside the house, an unidentified man alleged that Chantil Rodway had beaten him with a package of frozen meat during a quarrel. The extent of his injuries wasn't reported. Rodway was arrested and held overnight before appearing in court Sunday to face charges of assault and assault with a weapon. She's released and scheduled to appear in court in January 27th.
Now, maybe I missed this. Is there some sort of explanation as to what the sort of escalating incident was?
No, they were having a quarrel, and so she beat him up using a package of frozen ground beef.
Does it sound like she went through a series of other items and then ended it beef?
I'm imagining. See, in my mind, I'm thinking of one of those value packs that are like about a foot and a half long.
Of sausages or something?
Of ground beef.
Oh,
and
Right.
It's a big fat, and it's like frozen. That thing's hard as a rock.
Right.
So imagine you get really, really angry at somebody. You're fighting in, say, the kitchen where you have taken out the frozen ground beef to thaw and just get so angry, pick it up and just wallop him with it, and then realize this is a great weapon and just keep hitting him.
No, and you said to yourself, this serves its intended purpose well.
This is doing the job.
No, this is doing the whacking that I need accomplished
this
right
is
now.
Some
this meat.
Serious whacking this frozen meat.
I really wasn't trying to. I wasn't even trying to set you up for that. I just couldn't come up with a word other than whacking.
And yet you couldn't help but go
it's
there.
It's like I was going to say I felt the whacking coming on and I just couldn't stop it. But I just saw the word looming ahead like a highway off-ramp, and I tried to steer to a different verb, and it just my brain wasn't having any of it.
Nope. And the whacking and the frozen meat were just the deer frozen in the headlights of your...
Right. Now I get, slapping, punching, pummeling, thwacking even, but then whacking only. Okay.
So, Hick Watch?
Let's just do that now. It seems like a bit of a companion piece to the Juggalos. Anyway, here is your Hick Watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little cheese in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
Excellent. Here is Don Taylor with your Hick Watch.
A Florida woman who tried to take an assortment of food and clothing from Walmart.
I'm sorry, where?
Florida. Who tried to take an assortment of food and clothing from Walmart was arrested for theft. The unemployed 40-year-old woman was stopped by loss prevention officers after she concealed the merchandise and tried to leave the store with it. When she was stopped, the woman at the Walmart had on her person two chocolate cupcakes, chocolate-covered pretzels, pecan divinity, Dunkin' Donuts coffee, a candle, a pet bowl, two pairs of pants, a children's pant set, children's socks, a bra, and two shirts. The notice didn't state where she concealed the items or their total value.
Do we know if her name was Schmeckita or whatever, Chemeketa or whatever that woman's name was?
I think it's a completely different
Schmecko.
Woman. Schmecko.
And by the way, don't try to give me that it's the Shamiko. I know where vowels should be.
It was in names.
That was Schmecko. Well, here's the funny thing about this story is, A, it's in Florida. B, it's a variation on a crime that we heard just recently. Mm-hmm. So it makes you wonder if there's a sort of a rash of this kind of thing going on, or if whoever this is saw our good friend Schmecko on the news and said, "My God, what a revelation!
What a brilliant! I'm a woman of size. I could conceal a candle and a pet bowl and two pairs of pants and cupcakes under my breasts."
Now, what is the thing you're saying after candle?
A pet bowl.
Okay,
a bowl for your pet.
Okay, first of all, I don't know what that means. Oh, like a watering dish?
Yeah, like a food dish for a dog.
You should know that I and many people heard pit bull there initially.
Oh,
and that was a whole different...
They don't sell those at Walmart.
Well, and that's a thing. You want to be careful about the delicate areas into which you place the pit bull.
That's true.
You want to be, that's...
Because they're crazed death machines.
Yeah.
And they'll go crazy.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I would say there's several no areas for that. Also, what is pecan divinity?
Well,
is that a stripper?
Yes, that's my name when I was a dancer. I was known as Pecan Divinity.
Is it a flavor or is it an actual food
itself? You know what divinity
I do
is,
not,
right?
No.
Divinity is a sort of a fudge-like candy. It's a lot like nougat, and it's whipped and then it's dropped in pieces, and it's very fluffy. It's very nougaty, and this would be divinity with some divinity has nuts in it. This would be divinity with pecans.
I did not know that. Mm. All right, excellent.
Also, chocolate covered pretzels, Dunkin' Donuts coffee, two pairs of pants.
I mean, even if you were a woman of substantial carriage, where? Let's just go through the items. Okay, first thing.
Okay. Well, the chocolate items I find difficult because those would have to just sort of be in coat pockets. Because if you put those, like, if you are a large woman like Schmecko was.
They're going to melt. Well, so maybe it's a bag of, like, Hershey's Kisses, let's say. Maybe. Then,
Well, but it says two chocolate cupcakes and chocolate-covered pretzels. And pecan divinity. She may just not have thought out that part.
The chocolate cupcakes, if there's two of them, it may have been Hostess. Because, like, really, who would steal two unless they were loose?
No, they're probably Hostess.
I can't imagine
cupcakes.
Stealing loose cupcakes, even if you're that woman. Even if you are going to be the one eating them.
Yeah.
You wouldn't eat something stored, like,
under
your bosom.
No.
I mean, that's not your,
Besides which, it would just be fairly useless after that point, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's
not even a cupcake anymore. It's just pudding.
Because... Yes, it is. Because it seems like either, I can't believe we're taking this seriously. That's why we need a scientist or a juggalo to answer these things. Because it seems like either your bosom is not substantial enough to hide the cupcake, in which case you can't steal it, or it is, in which case, it's going to be rendered basically into like a two-dimensional object.
So let's just say the chocolate things are in like clothing pockets.
All right.
But then still she has to find a way to conceal a bag of coffee.
All right, now, like a bag of coffee.
It says Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and I believe that comes in the bags, the 1 pound bags.
Yeah, so that's like the sort of rectangular.
Yeah.
All right, that's right there. I mean, that's like even if you put it down your pants, I mean, that's somebody's going to notice that.
Then a candle. We don't know what size the candle was.
Let's assume it's the long tapered variety.
Well, then that's easy to hide.
Is it, Debbie? A little niche reference there.
A pet bowl, a dog food bowl, which could be very small. It could have been one for, like, say, a cat, which would be fairly small.
Okay, but even
maybe
so.
Maybe you could just kind of put that one over one breast.
Because you don't want that clattering to the floor.
No.
And so I'm thinking that goes if face down, like in the bra.
Yeah, I think
almost
so.
As a, like a falsie.
Right.
Okay.
We got that. Then we have two pairs of pants. And I'm assuming these are adult pants since they also specified after that a children's pant set. So these would be two adult-sized pairs of pants.
And let's be honest, it's not like she's just wearing three pairs of pants.
Now, Schmecko was able to hide boots within the folds of her body.
Was it a full set of boots or was it just like – it was three, actually. It was an odd number.
Yeah, it was an odd number of boots.
All right. So two pairs of pants.
So she may have those jammed under –
She might have encircled her girth with them like some sort of a like a money belt.
Yeah. Then a children's pant set, which would be small depending on the size of the child. That wouldn't take up much space.
If she feigned
that
pregnancy,
could go in the other side of the bra.
To balance it out.
To balance out the pet bowl.
If she feigned pregnancy, though, tried to look as though she was a child, she'd bundle that up and sticks it underneath the shirt.
Then children's socks, again.
Easy to hide.
A bra. So she jammed like a secondary bra, let's say down the back of her pants or something. And two shirts.
Yeah, I don't know. See, like, right, the bra, the two shirts, we start to get a lot of, like, unless it was...
Getting bulky. Well, she did, again, she did get caught.
That's true.
So apparently she was not
effective.
Not very
good at this. And in Florida, because it's like in Michigan or something, and I always go to Michigan, and I'm so sorry about that. But it's just...
Here it's Florida, so, you know.
But see, like...
It's still warm.
I was going to say, there's no coat, because like in the Midwest or something, you know, you have the huge, heavy parka going on because it's like 20 below or something, like in Utah or whatever. You got the huge, bulky... But here... Yeah, if you're just wearing a down, the parka or something into the store, that's going to get somebody's going to notice that, and your felonious ways will be. Although, again, it sounds like she was in this story, because in the other story with Schmecko, it doesn't actually say how she got caught. Does it say how she was discovered here?
It said that the loss prevention officer. Saw her. She was stopped by them. So someone probably saw her jamming something down her pants.
Or just like she's just sort of sidling by. Nothing to see here. And shifting by and just rattling like a Glad bag full of, full of breakables step.
Now I'm looking to see if I can find like a picture of her.
Oh, it's too much to hope for. Oh, God. We were denied the Juggalo mugshot. So I think at the very, I mean, we need this. I mean, at the least. All right. Let's see. Oh, by the way, we have, let's see. We have a little bit of breaking relationship news here.
Oh.
Hold on a second. Where's my, All right. Breaking relationship news. Attention, ladies and gentlemen, I suppose. Jake Gyllenhaal and Taylor Swift have gone their separate ways. Their burgeoning love now over, says correspondent Aaron in Orange County. He follows up by saying, by the way, they've gone their separate ways. That's ways with a Z. He says, is there hope for any of us, I ask ye? No, there is not, sir. But there wasn't before, if that makes you feel better.
No,
so there you go.
And,
so,
and again, do people really believe they were actually dating? I mean, the whole, like, I'm really famous. Hey, I've got a movie coming out. Hey, we're just very obviously in public together getting our picture taken.
Why, you didn't find it absolutely fabulous that Jake Gyllenhaal was dating a woman?
Well, he has dated many women.
Mm-hmm. He spent social time with him.
Yes.
By date, he has made a social event that is arranged prior. That is not an act of spontaneity. It is not an ad hoc meeting.
You know, there are people who are able to have relationships with members of both sexes.
Yes, that is true.
You know, just because one is involved in a relationship with a lady doesn't mean that one doesn't also like, you know, the gentleman as well.
So leaving one's options open,
but
Dawn.
You know, but if one, you know, is someone of some public stature, one may want to make it very obvious and when one does have a relationship with a lady so that, you know, people don't think about the other thing.
Here's the thing. I don't know anybody. First of all, I don't know any guy that cares whether or not, except for other gay men, I suppose. Not that he's gay, you know, by saying other. I'm not implying. I'm talking about a guy I knew once a long time ago, not Jake Gyllenhaal. Another guy named Jake.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I don't know any guy that would care if Jake Gyllenhaal was gay or not, except for gay men themselves who might think, like, well, hey, I got a shot. And frankly, women would just find it hot. So I don't know what that—I'm not saying he's gay, but if he was, like really honestly, who cares?
I think there's still a lot of that public perception among actors that it will limit
your
ability.
They can't play straight.
It's hard. Because traditionally, for a long, long time, it was really, really hard to get cast in straight roles if you were openly gay. And so I think, you know, guys like Neil Patrick Harris are kind of helping to change that. But I think it's still a bit of a hindrance, I think. I mean, and there are some people that it's really surprising, like guys like, you know, Kevin Spacey, who I think has still never come out.
By the way, that's not Rick Emerson saying that Kevin Spacey is gay.
But I mean, you know, there are a lot of actors that I think
it is believed by many people that Kevin Spacey is gay.
And there are a number of actors that is believed by many people that, you know, et cetera. Well, some Jodie Foster, for example. I mean, it's been written about that she, you know, and her longtime companion, who is a producer and produced many of his things, and they live together and they raise children together. But Jodie Foster herself still has never said, I'm gay.
I think about this a lot, actually. I think about Jodie Foster a lot in this way, in that, like, it's strange to me. It's not like she's really, like, sexy and sells a lot of newspapers or whatever. But on the other hand, it is strange that tabloids leave her alone. I don't know why that is. I mean, you can say, well, because she doesn't play along. But there's a lot of people who don't play along, and they don't get spared. Because there's two schools of thought on the tabloids. You know, one is that, well, you just don't play along. You don't play their game. You don't use the tabloids for anything, and so, you know, and you don't put yourself out there as somebody, you know, you don't put yourself out there in a way that they can get anything on you. The other school of thought is that if you just feed them every now and again, then they won't come after you. In other words, if you give them stuff now and again, just enough to keep them happy, they'll be sated and they won't sort of descend on you. But she doesn't, you know, but I don't know that's true, because there are people who try both of those things and it doesn't work. I don't know why they leave her alone.
I think because she's just not interesting to them in that way. I mean, when you think about
Is it because it's assumed?
If you think about how many people there are in the public eye, and how few of them actually get targeted with any intensity by tabloids. I mean, you know, it really is. They do tend to focus on specific people, and because a lot of actors are to tabloids just really boring,
right?
You know, they aren't offering anything that's going to be juicy, and just the fact that you're gay isn't necessarily enough. And if she's never done anything to piss them off either,
right,
why would they?
And plus, I guess you can make the case that Jodie Foster is talented and, you know, and famous and influential and, you know, whatever, and powerful, and maybe I already said that. But she's not interesting in and of herself. She herself is not a compelling person.
Yeah, and she's apparently, I guess she's just a very, very, a surprisingly normal person, and an extremely, you know, and which makes her very uninteresting, I think, to tabloids.
She's not Kirstie Alley, in other words.
Well, my favorite story about Jodie Foster is something I heard a few years ago. It was like just one of those things that somebody, I think, on the internet just mentioned in passing. They had been in L.A. They were somewhere. There was a Starbucks or something that was giving out free samples of cookies. And Jodie Foster was walking by with one of her children, this little boy. And the little boy went up, got his free cookie. And as they were walking away, he complained about the cookie because he said he really wanted chocolate chip. And Jodie Foster just looked at him and said, "Hey, beggars can't be choosers."
That's awesome.
And it's kind of like, how awesome is that?
Fantastic.
Because she's freaking Jodie Foster. She could go back and go, "Give my child a different cookie."
Well, and also you can see the fact that she could be crazy at this point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like the child star and the John Hinckley thing and the whatever. And they had her playing whores when she was like 10.
Right.
So, I mean, she could have turned out, she could have been Christy McNichol, you know, and, you know, or anybody like that. So it is sort of amazing, actually, that she is just not like in a clock tower with a gun right now. Because she would, by all rights, I mean, she would certainly be entitled to that.
And apparently her mom was pretty nuts, and she had a really contentious relationship.
Did she have a weird, like, Brooke Shields mom?
Kind of, yeah. Her mother was her age. Well, her mother was a single mom raising her and, like, her brother, and they were both kid actors. And then she reached a certain age when she just didn't want to be managed by her mother anymore. So I guess they had a pretty bitter falling out.
Well, and she went to, like, Harvard or Yale or something, too.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. She's scary smart.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably just knows that she can. There's probably something comforting that comes with that, too, that she doesn't have to play along because she knows she can just, like, chuck it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's got enough money, and also she can do, like, other stuff. And so she can just tell them all to get bent if she wants.
She was one of the first actors, one of the few actors who actually took her production deal, because most actors get a production deal, and generally it's in name only. It's just something where they can get extra money and they get a credit, and it's mostly for their ego.
Right.
And she took her production deal and set up offices and set up a business with her business partner and started producing movies and producing projects. Drew Barrymore's the same way. And it's like people don't actually expect actresses to do that when they get a producing deal.
You know, Drew Barrymore really is surprising because who would have predicted that, you know, the junky chick from Firestarter was going to end up being like a player in Hollywood?
A savvy businesswoman.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the guys who run Hollywood now, and I want to say guys, you know, in the gender neutral sense, it is like
mostly just, guys. Still.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know what I'm saying? It's like when you look at the people who run Hollywood, it's like it's just, I mean, leaving all of that aside, it is not people coming from levels of stardom or areas of stardom you would have expected, like the taxi driver chick or the girl from E.T. or the freaking dispatcher on Taxi, who now apparently like runs the city.
Or Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah.
Who is like a, you know, well, Kelsey Grammer, who is a gazillionaire because
Mark
he's such
Wahlberg, a
successful producer. Yes, Mark Wahlberg.
I mean, he produces Boardwalk Empire, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, and so that, you know, freaking underwear model, you know. And then, like, also, you know, and this is a thing you look back now and it seems obvious, but, like, an underwear model and, like, the guy who made the movie with the rubber shark now, like, run the entire town, which is just, you know, which is weird. All right. Well, we should probably just end today's show.
Yeah, probably.
By the way, somebody has taken Pat Robertson quotes and they've started to slot in the word juggalo now and again.
Yay.
All right. Well, I'm going to bump this top five to tomorrow. I can see. Here's the thing. Is like this right here. You hear this? You know what that is?
You're almost empty.
That's
visa.
The last of my caffeine.
See?
Yeah, and so my brain power, it's like the wizard needs food badly, Rick needs caffeine badly, and it's like my neurons are going to start, my synapses will be misfiring like any moment, so we're going to bring the curtain down before that happens. Well, you won't be here for the top five, which is sad.
No, I won't.
But that's okay. So you'll be back on Thursday. Just so for people who are listening and curious about this, so what is up with Patrick? What is
They have one more test that they were unable to do when he was in the hospital for various reasons. So they're going to send a scope down his throat and up into his liver. So they just want to do one last check of something to make sure that he's not filled with cancers, I guess.
So this is the this is the procedure he already had done, and they're just checking the same area once more.
They did this once before. He had an occluded bile duct in his liver, and the thing is,
what does occluded mean?
Blocked.
Okay.
And so it was blocked bad enough, actually, that they couldn't get the scope up into it to see inside of it and to take a sample. So when they were doing his, they did that while they were taking out his gallbladder. So the guy said they actually widened the passage a little bit so that later, which will be tomorrow, they could come back and take another look.
Now that he's all calmed down and relaxed, they can...
And now that he's all healthy and feeling better, they just have to keep poking at him until they can find something horrible.
You know, here's the thing about Patrick. So he came by the studio, I guess it was like last... it was on the... maybe on New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve, but I don't think I'd seen him since then. And it's not that he... It's not that he looks unhealthy as such. He was already like, you know, he'd already lost a lot of weight.
He lost like 60 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, he'd slimmed down a lot, like just since I'd seen him. And then, of course, he lost a lot more in the hospital. But I got to tell you, it's not that he looks sick, but Lara asked me, she's like, well, how's he looking? I said, well, he looks really tired. Like it's been a long, like we were saying, it's a long 6 weeks for us. I mean, it's been a longer, 3 or 4 or 5 weeks or whatever for him, where he's just been in a bed with things jammed into sensitive areas of his body over and over.
You know, he was feeling horrible and he was losing weight and he was so fatigued for like a month before he got really sick and we figured out what it was. And you know, only now, just this week, he's finally getting his energy back. And it's really nice to see. It's really nice to see. But at the same time, he's like, you know this, you're married. You love the person you're married to.
But
there are certain little things they do that drive you a little bit crazy.
You're now not forgiving those anymore.
Well,
they're back to bugging you.
And I was like, I miss Patrick. I'm looking forward to it. And now he's getting back to his old self, which means he does these things like just says no for no good reason. I'll say, honey, would you hand me this? No.
And see, things that were charming,
doing that,
or at least quirky when you first met him, became really irritating. But then after he was in the hospital, were charming again for like a day and a half. Now, instantly back to...
Also what it is there's this part of me, I realized that sort of almost superstitiously, there's this part of me that kind of thought that once he was like not sick anymore and he got back to normal, maybe some of those things would have gone away.
Like it's like a house thing. Hey, we found the tumor that's causing that thing where he says no all the time.
Yeah.
We're going to incinerate it. No, that doesn't really work.
No.
Not that I ever make any of those, the comments or have any of those thoughts.
So there's the kind of thing where you think, wow, I'm so glad he's feeling better. Oh, he's starting to do those really annoying things again.
It's so great. He's back to the way he was. Ah, crap.
That includes that. But I am happy that he's chipper and full of life again.
He's well enough to scream tomorrow when they jam a hose into him. Well done. All right. Well, tell him to give him our best and et cetera. And so tomorrow we'll have Mr. Eric D. Snyder here, as well as Kelly Clark from Willamette Week Thursday, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian, and Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willig with Humor Me Comedy 101 and so forth. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. And again, we want to give a huge shout out to a new listener, Oliver Milne in Glasgow. Greetings and welcome, and thank you for your support.
Great,
sir. That's daunted. Rick Emerson didn't do that. He doesn't know where your country is, but he also doesn't know how to do your accent with anything even approaching accuracy, so he doesn't attempt those things anymore. So the Rick Emerson Show made possible every day, including today, by a generous grant from y'all. It is Tuesday, January 4th, 2011. Thank you for listening, my friends. Be safe, and we will see you all tomorrow. Bye now.